The Dark Tower 3, The Wastelands, by Stephen King.
Welcome to the Nowhere Mulberry Book Club Show, Episode 3, I guess you could say, because we're doing The Dark Tower 3, The Wastelands, by Stephen King. I'd like to join my co-host, Mulberry Bill. How's it going, Bill?
It's going well. It's nice to finally talk about this book.
We're finally...
Get it out of the way so we can move on.
I know, we're finally doing it. It's so funny, this book... It's like you live with it for a month, and then the show is kind of like seeing it off, like pushing it away as it floats down the river. We're done.
It's putting it on the ice floe.
Exactly. And I can't wait to read Wizard in Glass. And really, I wanted to start it right at September 1st, but, you know, it's okay. But, you know, it's a lot of pages, so I'm going to get cracking on it.
Yeah. It's got to, well, we'll get into how it. Most likely will start at the end of the show.
Right. Now, this is book three, like I said, of the Dark Tower series. We love the first two books. And I got to say, just right away, let's get into the book. One thing that's great about the drawing of the three is we get to know the characters so well of Eddie, Susanna, and of course, Roland. And we know so much about Jake. If you remember back to The Gunslinger, I was very bummed of what Jake's fate was in that.
Yes, it was heartbreaking. This kid put all his energy, love, respect towards Roland, and you know, it's just that quest for the tower, and he had to be sacrificed.
Yeah, I always wrestled with that because, you know, it's like the way I feel about Roland, sometimes it's ambivalence, you know. But also, I love him at the same time.
He's so one-track minded. He's so obsessed with the tower. He's obsessive compulsive.
But there's no doubt in my mind that he loved Jake as much as he loves Eddie and Susanna. But at the same time, there's this price you pay for his desire to get to the tower. So it's like I understand.
Much like with great power comes great responsibility.
Right. But it's almost like with each new book, we understand it more. And what I love about the series so far is how much his character has changed in a way where he's picking up subtle language things that Eddie and Susanna say, and they kind of pick up things from him.
He's also become much less hardened.
Right. He actually makes little jokes more, but they're straight-faced jokes where Eddie's like, ah, get out of here. Like, he realizes he's joking to him. You know, that's what I love is that he'll say something to Eddie, and Eddie's kind of has to look at him.
Yeah,
to realize.
He has to think about it for a second.
And there's a couple of times that he does that in the book that it's great. That's what I love also is all these books have great humor in them. You know, these moments where you laugh, and it's fantastic. And as this book starts, you know, they've left the beach in the drawing of the three, and now they're in a wilderness type area,
the West Woods.
Yeah, the woods, and you know, you can just close your eyes. Well, actually, you have to open them to read it, but then close your eyes and see the description of everywhere, these lush woods and these the sounds and the all that. You know, I can just close my eyes and picture them there.
You almost have to think of it like the Pacific Northwest, the way they talk about gigantic hoary pines that are 3 feet wide at their base.
Right.
And, you know, just dead trees in a layer of pine needles in places, and it's very vividly written for that.
Yeah, it is very descriptive. You know, what's funny is like we've read so much Stephen King now. It'd be hard to stop, wouldn't it, at this point?
I'm actually, you know, I really am enjoying the Dark Tower series, but I'm actually kind of looking forward to branching out a little bit. Yeah, right. I think you become complacent if you read too much of one author.
Yeah, that's true. Like, maybe, you know, we've talked about Stephen King and what people expect of him. He gives the reader so much that it becomes kind of like, well, what else you got? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right.
And, you know, when we're done with this series, The Dark Tower, we'll move on to other things. Right now, I just, like, I can't wait to devour the next book.
But yeah, it's one of those series that you actually, in your mind, befriend these people. Like, you know them personally. And while I was in the midst of reading the book the first time, I was having dreams that I was somehow connected to these people.
Right. There's a lot of really cool symbolism in the book of how these people have connections. And we'll get to that in a bit with Jake and Eddie. But as the book starts out, it's Susanna and Roland basically doing target practice.
Yeah, it's been two. I think it said it's been almost 2 months. They've been in the West Woods, and Roland's training Susanna to be a gunslinger, right?
Yes, and he's completely healed now. He's all better. We think at first, I'm like, oh, good. It's good old Roland. He's back to his former self. And there's a subtle hint there that he's a little shaky, right?
Yeah.
And Susanna, you know, begs, you know, another thing, if I want to digress here for a second, is how the book and how Stephen King writes it, it'll digress again to when Susanna agreed with Eddie that she should be the one to bring it up, that they think something's wrong with him.
Yeah.
And then she asks him about it. And Eddie didn't think he would tell her anything, but maybe if he was alone with her and that kind of thing. I love all that little detail like that. And he wants to tell her, but he tells her nothing, of course. And that is that he thinks he's going insane.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, shit.
They know something's up, but they, you know, he just seems off. He's not Roland. And I think they're worried that if something is happening to them, that they're going to be left alone. You know, he taught them how to shoot, but it's not their world to live in.
Right. Susanna says, with you gone, well, we're dead. We're not going to survive long. Because he knows places to avoid and stuff like that.
Well, and he's the quest. I mean,
that's the whole reason, you know, they're there.
How are they to continue on a quest without the leader of the quest?
Right. And there's this whole bit about, do you remember, basically he's showing Susanna how to fire. I mean, she's already knows. He's showing her target practice and these rocks, these little stones. Yeah. And he's kind of getting her upset because he's saying these are the honk mafas that...
Well, she was getting snippy with him. Like, oh, you think I can't do that? And I think there's a moment that says that he can see an edge of Detta Walker in her. Like, this arrogance.
Right.
So, and he says, like, I won't slap you like Court, you know, but he does a thing where he, like you said, he starts to play on her emotions, where he mentions, you know, what happened to you in Oxford Town, where those honk muffas pushed you around and called your friend gay or something, and then he digs deeper and goes, and this last stone is Jack Mort, you know, and it's just like, whoa.
Right, and remember you have to say the gunslinger, what would you call that, the little motto they have?
The gunslinger's oath?
The creed, yeah. I guess. And do you remember what that is?
I do not aim with my hand. He who aims with his hand has forgotten the face of their father. I do not shoot with my hand. He who shoots with his hand has forgotten the face of their father. I do not kill with my gun. He who kills with their gun has forgotten the face of their father. And it's like, I kill with my heart, I think.
Yeah,
I don't have it completely right, but it's something like that.
Oh, here it is. I do not aim with my hand. She who aims with her hand has forgotten the face of her father. I aim with my eye. I do not shoot with my hand. She who shoots with her hand has forgotten the face of her father. I shoot with my mind. I do not kill with my gun. She who kills with her gun has forgotten the face of her father. I kill with my heart is basically what it is.
There you go.
And then she does the blam, 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 and she gets all of them. She thinks she misses the last one, but he shows her that she nicked it. And meanwhile, during this whole conversation in the shoot where she's shooting, you see, at least you imagine in the background, some birds flying away, some trees falling in the background.
Yeah.
And Roland makes a mental note about it, but he's not really paying attention.
Yeah, just before that happens, he's like, you know, he hears some dead wood crashing, some trees, and he's like, oh, I'll just file that away for later.
Yeah, he's busy at the moment. You know, this is the where the book is just like, well, where the story is just like, interesting. I love how things just start to just get so interesting, you know?
And the flow of it, the way this is told, and I hate to even gush, but the way it jumps from Susanna and Roland to they hear, you know, they go through all this thing, and then they hear the crashing, you know, and they, I think Susanna remarks something about like, oh no, Eddie.
Yeah, like, she's like, so, Eddie's down there.
So Roland throws her up on his shoulders, and they take off, and then from there, it goes into the story about Mir. And it's just the way it jumps from, it like segues from one thing to the other and then back again is great the way he does that.
I picture this great beast running in slow motion. It is close up like on its mouth and it's drooling and there's these foam like,
and like the white maggot like parasites. Just
right. I love how
it's dripping from everything.
It described it as, again, I swear that Eddie was described the same way when he was going through the heroin withdrawal, like sour shit is what he smells like. And that's what it reveals. It's a gigantic bear, this huge, gigantic.
It's a 70-foot high bear. And I'm trying to think, is that hind leg standing up or all 4 feet on the ground?
I don't know. And it's like running, destroying everything. Like trees are exploding as it hits them. And it describes how hundreds of years ago, or is it even thousands of years ago, when the natives in that area,
the old ones,
would hunt this thing, or they would try to, but of course nothing could kill it. And
then it gets sick, it gets infected with these parasites, and it goes mad.
Yeah.
And he knows that someone's back in his forest, and he's thinking it's the old ones have come back, and that they've poisoned him. This is why he's going mad. And he decides, well, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm going to go get him. So he heads on towards the camp that Eddie's at.
Oh, I remember it says something clicks and clacks and revolves on his head. And I was just like, wait, what did it say there? And I read it again. I was like, what is that about? I don't understand.
A whirring sound or something.
Yeah, and I was like, what? You know, it's just like I read it a couple of times. Like, I don't know what this means. But anyway, let me just keep reading, you know. And then it goes into Eddie, who's now Whitlin. He's whittling with Roland's knife. He's carving things out of wood. And he's remembering about Henry teasing him about it. He was
And this is a really, it's a character moment that kind of shifts Eddie from the junkie to his own man. Because you kind of figure out that Eddie was a junkie because he was such a beaten down person by his brother.
Right.
You know, it even kind of gets into that in the drawing of the three, but here you finally realize that, you know, he became the man he was because his brother was an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, his brother hated Eddie to do anything that he couldn't do, Henry couldn't do. And, you know, Henry's the older one. He's the one that's supposed to be good at something, not Eddie. So he, like, ragged on Eddie and teased him, like, oh, what are you making a piss pot for your eeny weeny teeny peeny?
Yeah.
Like, and it just made Eddie to the point where he was teased so much that it basically blocked this ability or this love for carving that he had completely out.
Right, and now he's picked it up again, but still, when he'll start to do it, he hears Henry in the back of his mind. And
yeah, and it's just a great moment where they describe how he's in the woods and he sees this this like knot jutting out of a stump of the tree, and he sees something in it. But then the moment he sees it, that Henry's voice comes back into his head, like, you're such a loser.
Right, and isn't it that point he remembers like that a piece of wood that looked like that back when he was a kid with Henry, and they would walk down the street or whatever, and it reminds him of something like that. And I don't even remember if that's the point where... No, I think it's later, where he has to remind himself that Henry's dead, and he feels a sense of relief when he realizes that.
Yeah, that's whenever he sees the piece of ash that he wants to make something out of. He doesn't know what it is yet,
right?
But he wants to make something out of it.
Because he knows he's free. And this is, you know, that's a good part where it's basically him thinking about Henry, and you know that he's trying to get over all this that basically has held him back his whole life.
Yeah, it makes you think that, like, whenever they talk about him in the drawing of the three, about how there's a monkey on his back, and then the monkey's heroin, it's not just heroin, it's his brother.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's while he's doing this that he hears something in the distance.
Yeah, he's so engrossed in carving, it's just like, what?
And luckily he has Roland's gun, doesn't he? He has it stuck in his pants, and I guess that isn't luckily because it doesn't really help him in any way.
No, but it's funny that there's this moment where he hears this, like, beast approaching. It's almost right on top of him, and he thinks to himself, like, stand or run. And then he goes... You know, he's looking, he sees his knife, and he sees the gun, and he just says to himself, oh, man, I'm
fucked. Yeah, I love that.
It's just like, oh, great. And then finally he sees the bear, and it's a bear the size of King Kong. He can't kill it. He can't run from it. What the hell is he going to do?
Right. Doesn't he at one point, he goes, one thing's for sure, it's one big motherfucker.
Yeah, it was so great. I just love how vulgar and blatantly cynical he is. He just says it.
Yeah, I just love that I'm fucked. You know, if you saw a giant bear running towards you, I think you just... And not only that, it's not a big grizzly bear. It's a giant King Kong-sized bear. Yeah.
At first he says it's King Kong, and then whenever he finally sees the bear and he's trying to figure out what to do, and it you know, he says, you know, if I can't run or run and I can't kill it, well, then I can climb. You know, get as high as I can to get away from Bearzilla.
Yeah, he calls it Bearzilla, and it's this giant thick tree that apparently Shardik, the bear, can't knock over.
Well, what's great, there's this moment where he's climbing and he's screwed. He knows that the bear is right there. He's staring at it face to face. Then the bear just sneezes.
Oh, yeah.
It sneezes again and again. And at first he's like, what the hell? And he's covered in, like, this, it says, hot snot.
Yeah.
With, like, white maggoty parasites. And he's wiping it all over him. But then he thinks, well, this is my chance. You know, he takes the chance where the bear is just constantly sneezing
to run up
a little higher.
Yeah, that's what's so gross is that it's got these worm things that are coming out of its nose and mouth.
Yeah, and he's freaking out, like, is this going to get into me? But then he notices that they're dying the moment they leave the bear.
Right. Yeah, they're just dying. But that is gross. Hot snot all over him.
Ugh.
And isn't it that point he notices when he's up above the bear that it's some kind of radar dish spinning on top of the bear's head?
Yeah, he looks into the bear's face and it's a radar dish antenna.
He's like, he looks like he's wearing a hat.
Yeah, and it's like he said it's squealing and screeching like its parts are failing, like its gears in an engine is skipping.
Yeah, it's not going to last much longer, basically. And that's when Susanna and Roland show up, and, you know, she's on his shoulders, so she has the best shot. And he's like, take the shot! You know, shoot that thing on top of its head that looks like an obvious, something important, I guess, spinning on its head.
He says it looks like a little silver hat.
Isn't the first thing Roland says is, it's a guardian! Or something like
that.
Yeah,
it's like he never thought he would ever see him. He thought they were myth. He was told about them as a child. But then to see this 70-foot bear... And all of a sudden, it's like all these things must flood back to him. Like, oh my God, it was real.
Yeah, I think he even says Cuthbert and Elaine believed it, but I never did, or something like that. And he was like, it's a guardian, a great one, or something like that. And he tells her to take the shot, and she does the whole thing. At first he says,
you know, hey, shoot it in the ass.
Yeah, to
so
distract
it. It'll stop shaking the tree because the tree's ready to go that Eddie's on. And so she shoots it in the ass, and then he says, you know, hey, when it turns, shoot it in the little steel hat. and he tells her to say her lesson. And there's this great moment where she's like saying the first line, and then she's like, oh my gosh, I can't do it. Says the second line, oh my gosh, I can't do it. Says the third line, and then he's like, shoot it. And she goes, the last line, so great. I kill with my heart, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And then it pulls the trigger, and then it says like how the you could just see it. It's so cinematic, the way the dish just explodes into fragments, and a blue fire erupts and wraps around the bear's head, and it's flailing its arms and stumbling around, and you just... Just that moment, just the vividness of it is so cool. Like, you can totally see it on film, just this
right.
massive bear.
And just the way it's charging towards her as she's saying the lesson, it's just like, come on, shoot!
And it's so funny, you're reading this, and I'm sitting here like, I'm there, or I'm watching it, I don't know, but it's just the way it's written is so nerve-wracking.
And there's a part where Eddie climbs down to the ground. He's like, wow, you know, he's just kind of marveling at. And then it stumbles back towards him. He's like, oh, shit. You know, yeah. He thinks he's in the clear for a minute.
It spasms. Like, it's in its death throes, and it finally spasms. And it says it's like it sounds like it's stripping its gears. It falls to the ground dead. And that's whenever they notice a steel tag on it.
Right, because there's this... label underneath it. It's like, because right now as we're reading the story, you know, we see that it's a giant bear. Okay, that's crazy. But now it's got a radar dish on its head. Now she shot it and it had, like, you know, electricity and shit. And
yeah, it's like, what the hell?
It's like, is it a giant robot bear? And Roland is talking about it's one of the guardians. I remember they go in to investigate it and they see that label and it says something like
North Central Positronics Limited, Granite City, Northeast Corridor, design number 4, Guardian, type species, bear, Shardik, NR, subnuclear cells must not be replaced, NR. And it's like, huh? And then Eddie goes, it's a freaking robot!
Yeah. And don't they, like, remove one of the eyes or something?
Yeah, Roland, they're looking at it, and then all of a sudden Roland's off to the side, and Eddie, like, Roland, what are you doing? And Roland cuts one of the bear's eyes out. The way it's mentioned, how he lets this brown globule sit on the knife and then flicks it into the woods. And Roland looks inside and then tells Eddie and Susanna to look in there. And it's like, I think it mentioned, it's like steel wires and a red spark. And Eddie says it looks like a Sony Walkman. Because there's, like, a circuit board with solder and everything.
Yeah. It's funny, because Susanna, even though she's from the same world, she's from the past, so she doesn't even know what he's talking about.
She's like, what's a Sony Walkman?
What? Like, huh?
I'll tell you later. Right after that happens is whenever Roland stumbles and faints.
Right.
And he starts saying that there was a boy. There wasn't a boy. The boy. It's the boy. Always the boy. And then Eddie rushes to him and is like, what's wrong? And he says, go then. There are other worlds than these. And he faints.
I think it's very interesting when he starts to talk to Eddie about, do you remember what I told you on the beach about the boy? And he's like, no. And it's like you realize there's the split of events that happen. And I believe Eddie even draws it in the ground where when he kept Jake from dying, kept Jack Mort from killing him, time split up where there's one timeline where Jake did come to his world and they went and visited the, you know, they saw the slow mutants and all that. Mm-hmm. And then he fell, you know, he met him at the way station, gave him water and all that. Then there's the alternate timeline where that never happened. He never encountered Jake.
Yeah. He talks about how, he went to the guy with the red hair and Zoltan and, you know, had the whole discussion. He talked about how Tall happened, you know, the massacre, Sylvia Pittston, all these things that went down in Tall. He says, but that's where it changes. You know, in the real world, I got to the way station, found a water pump, got water, and moved on. But in the made-up world, I encountered this boy who didn't enter through a door, but his doorway was death. And he asked Eddie, like, don't you remember? I remember in the rage of my fever, I was talking about Jake and He even does an impersonation of Eddie that takes him back. Like, whoa, wait, what? I didn't know you were Rich Little.
Yeah.
And then Eddie's like, no, I don't remember anything like that. So somehow this alternate timeline, alternate reality has even basically erased itself from Eddie's mind.
And, you know, what's funny, I was talking to you how I noticed, like, immediately at the beginning of the book, it said Roland had, like, 300 bullets. And I was like, huh? Because, you know, we just finished the other book, and he had 200 bullets. So I was starting to wonder if maybe this error was on purpose because it's an alternate timeline. I don't know. That just kind of entered my mind. And he starts telling them the story of Old Star and Old Mother.
Exactly.
And they're in the place that they called the shooting gallery. Now that their camp has been destroyed by a giant friggin' bear.
Man, it was pissed all over.
And I love it. There's talking about a stream of piss is coming out of the bear.
It sneezes. A hot stream of piss puts out the campfire.
It's like,
Could you imagine a 70-foot bear pissing all over your camp?
That'd be like a new lake or something.
That would be like whenever you see those hillbilly pools that people jump in and the sides break.
Yeah. So basically he's trying to tell them about the great ones because they're really curious. And he's telling them about the great old ones created the 12 guardians, and they would protect the 12 portals, and they're, you know, it's just like, huh? And you know, they lead
out of the world.
And he talks about, he remembers Hax. Remember the cook
from the gunslinger,
and he would tell him stories about it, which is really cool.
He said that the Hax told him that the creation of the 12 guardians was the last act of the great old ones, their attempt to atone for the great wrongs they did to each other and the world. And that the 12 points around the world where the lines of the portals cross at the center is what they call the 13th gate.
Right.
Or the Dark Tower.
If you think of it as a clock.
Exactly. Like,
And each number represents a guardian. And right smack in the middle, where the hands of the clock would be, is the tower. And I just thought that all this was incredibly interesting. I love, you know, there's any moment where Roland's like, okay, I'm going to tell the reader something. I just think is awesome.
The lore that just is just so cool.
It is. And he's telling them about, you know, the great old ones would protect this portal. And then he starts to name the animals, the bear, the fish, the lion, the bat, the turtle.
And he says, that's the important one, the turtle.
Right, and then he, do you remember the childhood song that he sang?
Yeah. See the turtle of enormous girth, on his shell he holds the earth.
It's like, oh, that's so nice.
I know, it's so pleasant. Like,
Hax taught him that.
So, like, and that's the thing that I think bothers me the most about the whole thing. Like, I even asked you this week while we were talking about the book, do you really think that Hax was evil? Did he really work for this Farson guy? Or was he somehow set up, or did Martin, as he was called then, somehow manipulate these people?
It's very possible,
Because it just seemed like, you know, he talks about how Hax taught him these things as he sat there and would give him nips of the cake frosting he was making. Like, Hax didn't seem like a guy that would betray his kingdom.
Poison a bunch of children.
It was like poisoned meat. I can't remember what it was, but they were going to send it to the city.
We learn more about that. And you know what's funny is Eddie, I love how he references things from his own world. Because he's like,
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Because he's like, I called it a robot, but that's not really what it was. There's this movie I saw called RoboCop. And he was a cyborg. And
because it kind of brings you back to where Eddie came from.
Yeah.
You know, you forget the timelines that the different characters are pulled out of. Like, I kept thinking Eddie was from 77, but that's Jake. Eddie was from, I think, 87. Susanna or Detta or Odetta was from, like, 67.
Right. And, you know, it's at this point, you know, when he's telling about that, he goes, he thinks he's been looking for the Guardian since he began his quest, but it never happened. You know, he never found one. But now, you know, he knows he's close because what's close to the bear would be a portal, right?
Yeah, they guard the portal.
So he knows that they're close, which is good, except for the fact that he knows there's something seriously wrong with him. And that's when he's talking about, I think even Susanna says, so who is this boy? And he's like, don't you know? I've spoke of him. And, you know, I've raved about him. Remember, Eddie, when I was sick and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah.
He goes, I remember you talking about a guy named Elaine, Court, Jamie DeCurry, Cuthbert, Hacks, Martin or something, Walter, Susan, even some guy named Zoltan.
Zoltan.
And he's like, I've never heard of a Jake or whatever. And it's just like, it must be terribly frustrating for him.
Yeah, and that's whenever he talks about the two different versions. Like the one he believes and the one that's made up, where he meets Jake, travels with him, and lets him die under the mountains.
I love the mention of the slow mutants. Doesn't that seem so long ago?
I know, the muties.
And so, you know, he tells him about Toll and all that. It's just interesting to revisit that place. You realize how far he's come. And
yeah, and the way it's told, because Eddie had heard it before, but Susanna hadn't. So it was just kind of reiterating it for the party.
The one thing that I love, they're not like, I don't believe this.
Well, yeah,
this is impossible.
How can they not? It's like they have to give him the benefit of the doubt.
They don't waste any time not believing anything, which I like, is they accept that they're in this crazy-ass world. You know?
That's about the only thing you can do whenever you go through the things that they did in the drawing of the three.
Right. There's even moments that they admit to themselves that they would never give this up for anything. Because even though there's all this, there's fear and they don't know what lies ahead, they're addicted. They're totally.
But there's this moment, though, just before that where Eddie, you know, he hears about 12 portals and that they lead out of the world. And he's like, oh, really? Do they lead to our time? Like he hasn't yet been fully convinced.
Right.
Of what they're doing until this night, right after this discussion they're having about Shardik and then
I remember how
Jake.
This starts. He shows them the jawbone.
Yeah.
He's like, I took this from the man in black off his dead body. It was his jaw. And he goes, there was another one that he used to protect Jake from the star
slug. Why would he have taken that one to replace the one he had if he never had it?
And doesn't he even say he tossed it aside and he thinks it was bad luck to do that, to discard it or something?
What, the jawbone?
Remember the first jawbone that he got from the way station, but now he doesn't have it anymore because that never happened, right? If Jake didn't. But now he has Walter's, and I can't remember what leads up to it, but he throws it into the fire.
Yeah, he throws it in the fire.
And that's when Eddie sees a vision. He sees a rose. It becomes
the jawbone first. It turns into a key, and it's the key with the three notches and the lowercase s on the end.
Yeah, the S shape at the end. Remember?
Yeah, and the key turns into the rose, and that's whenever it clicks in his head. The moment he sees the rose, like this calm settles over him, and he thinks to himself, or some it's told to him in some weird way. Behold the way into the tower.
Right. Right. Yeah. And he's like, remember the rose, remember the key, remember the rose, remember the key. And it's like, he doesn't know why, but he knows he has to. It's extremely important that he does. It's very cool. And remember, Eddie starts having dreams about it.
Yeah, when I was reading this dream, that night he falls asleep, and he has, it's so cool, like all the little links back to the previous book.
And do you realize we have not had any, in the first two books, there was no description of the tower.
No, this was the first one.
First, there's this Tom and Jerry's Artistic Deli. Remember
that?
He's
walking down a street in New York, and it's great. He has a copy of the book, You Can't Go Home Again, by Thomas Wolfe. And on the cover of it is stamped a key, a rose, and a door. So he's like looking at it, he opens the book, and the book says, The man in black fled across the desert, and the gunslinger followed.
Right, how cool is that?
Yeah, I was like, oh, hey. And he's walking, a bum asks for money, and Eddie gives him the book. And the bum is Enrico Balazar, the mob boss.
Yeah.
From the drawing of the three, and he's sitting in front of a store called the House of Cards. And that's what that's what this Enrico Balazar would build. And inside is a tower of cards with a King Kong with a radar dish on his head.
I love that. He had a radar dish on his head.
Yeah, and that's whenever he reaches Tom and Jerry's artistic deli, and that guy that they pulled through the door during the gunfight. Yeah, Jack Anthelini. He comes around the corner with half of his face gone because it was cut off by a lobstrosity, and he says, go ahead in, Eddie. After all, there are other worlds than these, and that train rolls through all of them. Data chum, data chi, not to worry, you've got the key. Yeah, and he sees that he does have the key, and it's the same key that was in the fire that he saw. And he walks into this field, turns around, and the door falls down. Like, shit, I guess I'm not going back that way. And he thinks that the field's like, there was like a battle or something, because it's covered in this deep scarlet, like it's blood. And then he realizes that it's roses. And he looks up, and it's just a field that stretches on for miles. And then on the horizon, he finally sees it. It's the Dark Tower. The description of it saying that it's enormous, but it raises and it tapers, and it's not dark, it's not black like he thought it would be. It's actually a soot-colored stone, and it just spirals windows and stairs going up and up. And then it's surrounded by, I think it says, puffy clouds that just flow around and above it in an endless stream. And there's this awesome illustrated picture online. I don't know who did the artwork, but it's like one of those pictures that I would love to have framed.
Yeah,
because it's just so gorgeous. It just just the representation of this is so gorgeous,
of him standing in the field of roses in front of the tower.
Yeah, and just the way the clouds are and everything, it's so cool.
And it's that dream ends because that's when Shardik's alarm starts going off, right?
But there's this one little extra part to it where you think it's just going to end, but then all of a sudden he gets this sense of doom. He's in the shadow of the tower, but then he realizes he's actually buried in the shadow. And then blackness pours out of the tower, and it gathers in like a blob, and it starts running towards him. There's eyes peering down at him from the sky that are red as blood. And it says he hears Jack Andolini saying, "A thousand worlds, Eddie, and that train runs through all of them. If you get it started, it's a bitch to shut down." You know, this is the first mention of the train.
Yeah.
But then the eyes, the red eyes staring at him. Eyes!
There's like this sense of wonder and awe, but then it turns kind of scary.
Like this is not just some fantastic voyage.
Right.
There's some serious shit here.
And it's like this deafening alarm sound where it's saying all this weird shit about there's no danger. 5 subnuclear cells are dormant. 2 subnuclear cells are now in shutdown. It just like goes on and on and on. They're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and Eddie whacks up and goes, "Well, how long has this been going on?" And he goes, "It's been about 15 minutes.
Basically, it finally stops, and you know, they're making their way, looking for the portal.
They have to put Susanna in that harness that she hates,
right?
And they have to go through like swampland and all that. And then that's whenever they finally get to the portal area.
They encounter these weird little robots.
Yeah, it's so crazy the way it's described.
I remember there being a snake.
Well, the one thing was that they said that the subway entrance, it looked like a subway entrance, the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was littered with bones. So they're like, well, this must be the spot if it's covered in bones that Shardik would stay in. It said that the largest of them looked like a kid's Tonka tractor. Another one was a rat, and another one was the snake.
Yeah. I just kept thinking, why would anyone make these except for some kind of amusement purpose?
I almost, you know, the moment I started reading it, I thought the way it said that they had formed a rough circle where they had just gone round and round and round like they were pacing. And I, for some reason, my mind flashed to, and this is terrible to even mention, episode 1, the pod racing guys, the little robots that would like maintain the pods.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that's the first thing I thought was these things must be like maintenance robots or something, or
right,
or you know, because he doesn't need protectors.
Maybe maybe Shardik had some kind of service bots, and
yeah,
he's never coming back, and now they have no purpose.
Yeah, so they're just kind of like, oh dear, Oh, dear.
And that's where they're telling, you know, he tells Eddie to put him out of their misery. Like, they turn on him towards him. And I just remember the part where Roland tells him to duck. And then
but they all have, there's this great moment where Eddie goes, oh, great. They all have the radar dishes on their heads, too.
Yeah, they all have the little mini radar dish. And some kind of bat creature flies at him or something. Robot bat.
Yeah, I think Eddie hits all of them except the rat.
He turns around and comes. Oh, yeah. Doesn't he say it bears teeth or something? It's like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's got like it's like saw blades in its mouth, and it starts going after Susanna. And Eddie starts freaking out, like asking Roland for help. And Roland's just standing there with his arms crossed.
Yeah, he's not going
to
help
for
him.
Eddie to finally just man up.
It's like, no, you handle it. You've got a gun.
Yeah, you're doing fine, man. Don't calm down. Just take care of it.
I love that. When, there's times where he gets so pissed off at Roland because Roland won't do anything. I mean, you know, if he was really in danger, he would. But he's
exactly.
trying to teach him a lesson.
Just gets so caught up in the
what about
the moment that he like he reverts back to like this immature quality that Roland just has no time for.
Right. And
it's almost like, you know, it's this father figure that's giving you that tough love. Like, you can do it. Just take a breath and shoot it.
You know, at the time, you know, where he thinks he's telling Eddie to duck, and Eddie does, but it's later on you realize that he never told him that.
Yeah.
He just knew to.
There's some sort of weird psychic connection.
Did you have to go back and read that to make sure he didn't tell him to? But
Yeah, I did. It's so crazy that I forgot that.
He did hear Roland in his head say that, which is interesting.
Yeah, he did.
The door that they didn't want to go near because it's making this kind of creepy sound.
It sounds, I think it said that it sounds mechanical, but also like Eddie gets near it and it's like this dark energy that's like pulling, like trying to get him to come through.
Right.
And that's when Roland's like, you know what, we better get out of here.
Yeah, we're not going to go in there.
This can't be good.
I was almost hoping they would, because I really wanted to know, even though it's...
But yeah, in my mind, I'm, like, trying to think of, like, what the hell? I mean, if it sounds like machinery, if it, you know, maybe it's more, like, crazy shardic stuff. What is it? Like, what is... Do they have to pass through a certain area to go through the portal? Like, I kept asking myself questions, wishing they would have gone through, but, you know, if it's that dark energy, then, no, probably best that they didn't.
And you know what's funny is I remember when they first mentioned Shardik, Eddie said something weird. He goes, why does that make me think of a rabbit?
Man. Yeah.
And so I looked it up online, Shardik. I just wanted to know. And it turns up a book called Shardik. It's about a great bear. And I believe it's written by the guy who wrote about rabbits in Watership Down, right? I forget the guy's name. But
Richard Adams? Am I wrong? I know it's Adams.
Sounds good to me. But I like how it describes it later as the Brer Bear and stuff like that. It was just really cool.
Yeah, I love that, how he'd always just... He would marginalize these huge things.
Right.
Like, I mean, it was almost killed by this thing. It's like, oh, go ahead and take it, Brer Bear.
You know, we've talked about little tie-ins there or whatever. One thing that Eddie does is he gives things nicknames or he calls them stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I realize somebody who does that on a certain show that we say is similar, reminds us a lot of the Dark Tower.
And it's so funny how we put two and two together with that, or you put two and two together with that. Because I didn't even think of that until you said it, and I was like, oh, yeah, they're fans of these, so why wouldn't they do that?
Yeah, because there's parts later on where Eddie's like, calls a guy Jeeves, the butler, and stuff like that. He gives everybody these names, or what did he call the old woman? I can't even remember at this point.
You know what? I'm going to have to, once we get to that point, I'll probably see it in the book. But
the old mother.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
But, you know, there's one thing about all of this that's going on right now with them and the portal is that you could tell how close they are. Roland, Eddie, and Susanna. Of course, Susanna and Eddie are, you know, husband and wife now. Kind of like, what would you call, like a spiritual husband and wife? Or
common law marriage.
Yeah, common law.
They've consummated the relationship.
Common mid-world marriage. But they're meant to be together. You know, it's Ka that they're together. But you feel the sense of closeness and also Roland being the teacher, which I love. Now, Eddie keeps having these dreams about this deli and the streets where, you know, we come to figure out that it's a place that he visited you know, where he walked up and down with Henry as a kid, right?
Yeah.
So you're wondering, what is this, these weird dreams? Did it drive you a little nuts that he wouldn't tell Roland or Susanna about these dreams yet?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of understood him wanting to get all the information before he mentioned it. But then I thought, why wouldn't he just outright say something that could possibly help Roland calm himself? Like,
because
I'm having all these dreams of the tower. I've seen it.
Yeah. You know how hard it would be
looking for.
How hard would it be not to tell Roland, I've seen the tower, Roland. I dreamt of it. You know, that would be like the first thing I tell him when I woke up. But
yeah, but you know what? Maybe if he told that to Roland, Roland would be somehow disheartened.
But also at the same time, I have to remember that Roland was going through a lot of shit where he had to mentally put up a fortress in his head not to drive himself crazy. You know what I mean? Because there was two different timelines warring in his head, and maybe it wouldn't be the best time to bother him with shit, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I felt really bad for Roland because he's wrestling with this, and it gets worse later.
Now that they're at the portal, this is when they discover the beam. Roland shows them find the beam.
How to find the beam when you look up. How sweet was that?
Yeah, just how everything parts.
And it's like at first,
like a slight.
Yeah, at first they couldn't see it, but then it's like, oh. And you even see birds going in the path of it, but they don't quite hit it or whatever.
Or they hit it, and then they kind of like jump and then have to like continue on. But and then there's the whole needle thing about how the floating needle and the needle can find the beam.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a magnetic thing. And then Eddie makes the comment, like, is it okay to be standing in this thing? Am I going to go sterile?
Yeah. Eddie takes the gunslinger's knife, and that's when he begins to carve. He's not sure what it is, but what, like you said, this piece of ash he found,
mm-hmm.
was it hardened ash? And he knew it would be perfect to make this thing, you know, he's going to make the key, right?
Yeah, he sees it's like, I guess he sees the key in it first and then decides, you know, hey, this will do something. And I think they even ask, like, what's it for? And he goes, I'm not sure yet.
Do you remember, he even looks at Roland at one point in the fire and he sees madness in his eyes. Like, holy shit, he's really, I think Roland's going a little nuts there.
Yeah, and he's like, here, take the, what is it? He says, take the knife, and that's whenever Eddie gets really pissed off. Roland ends up saying, listen, I'm having these really bad dreams. You know, these dual realities are making me crazy. Just take it. I might hurt you.
Is this the point where he gives him you take my gun, too. Take my belt.
Yeah, take my gun, take my belt, take my knife, take everything. And
oh, I remember the joke. So he's like, take my gun, Eddie. He's like, well, this is just ridiculous because if we can't trust you, you know, what are we going to do? And so he puts it on. He's like, what do you want me to do next? Take your knife? And he was like, yes, oh, that. And he's like, handing him the knife. And he's like, this is ridiculous. And he's like complaining about it. He goes, now can we go? And he's like, there's one more thing.
Weeping, creeping Jesus.
Yeah, it's weeping, creeping Jesus. And then he goes, just joking. I thought that was awesome that Roland.
Yeah, and I love the description of Susanna's laugh, that it was like musical as bells.
Yeah, Eddie's mouth just dropped open. In this time, Eddie keeps having dreams. He's dreaming of the guy saying, Dada chum, dada chi. Not to worry, you've got the key. So he's whittling this key, basically, right?
Yeah.
Roland is going more and more insane, where he's just kind of talking to himself. There was a boy. There was no boy. It's like wrestling with it in his mind. And I couldn't even imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, that duality.
I almost think of he needs a constant. Did you ever at one point think that he needed a constant?
Yeah, what is it that you're referring to?
Lost.
Was it Lost where they were saying that you need a constant?
Right. Remember, Desmond is getting lost in time.
There.
His
you
mind
need your
is.
Key.
And remember, his body was fine. It was his mind that was kind of lost in different times.
Wow, that's right.
It's very familiar, isn't it? And what it was is Desmond needed the key.
Yes.
Da-da-chi. He needs a key.
Wouldn't that be awesome if they had Lobstrosities show up on Lost this season?
Yeah, they bite two of Sawyer's fingers off or something.
No!
So basically, and then the chapter Key and Rose happens, which is very interesting because all of a sudden this character of Jake, who fell to his death in The Gunslinger, and then in Drawing of the Three, he's briefly there. He's there and he's alive. And so that was really cool. It's like, oh, wow, Jake is back in the book. But then very quickly you realize he's going through the same shit that Roland is. He's got two things going on in his mind. And one of them is he, the man, which is Roland, is there. And he met him and he saw him. He was at the way station. And I thought that was very interesting how it goes into his life with his parents who... I mean, you get the feeling that his parents are... They ignore him.
They're non-existent. Yeah, I mean, right. The mom's in a medicated haze. And the father is just... You know, he's a workaholic who doesn't even, you know, put any sort of dedication to his son. He just calls him the kid.
And he seems to do some coke from time to time.
Yeah, he's got a little Coca-Cola in his bottom drawer.
And it's almost like... Jake goes to a really good school, and they're letting the school handle his upbringing. You know, they know he'll be fine.
The Piper School.
Yes.
Not just any kid can get into the Piper School.
In The Gunslinger, remember Jake is telling Roland about his life, and it's cool how to see it slip in here where you see how it is. You get the background now of how his life is. And
yeah, how his the only one that actually pays him any attention is the maid, the Greta Shaw.
Right.
How she'll read his school papers and all that. And it's kind of sad because, you know, she's not really even that interested. She's just doing her job.
Right. Basically, would you describe it, he's having blackouts? Or he just having moments where he doesn't remember things? For instance, he does this school report called My Understanding of Truth that he doesn't even remember writing.
Yeah.
And I thought... I got to tell you right now, this whole Jake chapter leading up to what happens, I thought was really interesting and cool. I was eating up every minute of
it. Yeah, it was fascinating to see how his mind is slipping away and he's trying to figure everything out at the same time. And he's trying to keep on this straight face and interact with his teachers, like his Mr. Bassett, the French teacher, who seems like a genuinely nice guy. And just he's trying to put on this face of, oh yeah, I'm fine. He was like in that daze, and he's in the assembly and he screams no, and the teacher's like, oh, are you okay? He's like, oh yeah, I just overslept.
What's really cool about his My Understanding of Truth report is that it starts out with a quote by T.S. Eliot and Robert Browning, just like the book does that you're reading.
Yeah.
But it says, I will show you fear in a handful of dust, T.S. Butch Eliot. And then Robert Browning is, my first thought was, he lied in every word, Robert Sundance Browning.
Yeah. Like, I'd love to know where that came from. You know, the whole Butch and Sundance thing, sure, but, like, what made King want to, you know, refer to them as that?
I have no idea. It's really cool.
Maybe it's the cowboy thing. The gunslingers, I don't know, maybe something like that.
And it's so cool how it says, you know, the gunslinger is truth, Roland is truth, the prisoner is truth, the Lady of Shadows is truth, the prisoner and the lady are married, that is the truth, the way station is the truth, the speaking demon is the truth, we went under the mountains, and that is the truth, there were monsters under the mountain, that is the truth. One of them had an Amoco gas pump between his legs and was pretending it was his penis. That is the truth. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I love that that's just thrown in there. That, you know, for someone to read that and go, wait, what is it? What?
Yeah. Roland let me die. That is the truth. I still love him. That is the truth. You know, there's a reference here to Lord of the Flies that his teacher is talking about. I know they teach Lord of the Flies in school, but also in Low Men in Yellow Coats, Lord of the Flies is mentioned quite a bit. I'm wondering if it's one of King's favorite books or something.
It's quite possibly that. The other thing, the whole My Understanding of Truth gets into the fact that they obviously have some sort of psychic connection, because Jake has never known anything that happened in the Drawing of the Three. He never met Eddie, never met, you know, Odetta, Susanna. You know, he doesn't know any of these things until, you know, the way station.
Right.
But for him to bring that stuff up, how does he know that?
I don't know. That's, how does he have this tie-in to Blaine and knows about Blaine is a pain?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Who's, I don't know.
If he knows this stuff, it almost makes me wonder, is someone feeding him this? How can he know these things? He knows the past, and now he knows the future.
You almost think that, I mean, it's just like trying to think, is somehow whatever happened to him, I have no idea. I'm just trying to put the pieces together here, but by having two alternate timelines, he has some kind of connection. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever this is, it's something telling him something. Just like he goes to that, just starts walking and he winds up in that parking lot. He goes to the bookstore and then he finds Riddle Dee Dum and Charlie the Choo Choo. I loved all that. When he sits down to read Charlie the Choo Choo, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, but we're also skipping over the fact that he's obsessed with doors. He doesn't, you know, for some reason, every time he looks at a door, concentrates on a door, he thinks everything, you know, this insanity will be over. I'll open the door and I'll enter that world.
Right. It'll be done. I'll finally, the voices will stop and I'll be there with him.
Yeah. And this is, and where it starts is, you know, once he reads the essay he doesn't remember reading, he's looking at the closet door and thinking, well, I can just go through the closet door in the classroom and it'll be over. And that's whenever he asks to go to the bathroom and doesn't go back to class. He just skips out. Oh, and there, when he leaves the classroom and he's walking, he starts having the psychic experience where he sees everything that happened to him whenever he knows how he's going to be killed. You know, he starts sees the guy in the Panama hat, the one that yells, oh my God, he's kilt. Approaching the corner was the fat lady with the Bloomingdale bag in her hand. You know, and he thinks what she drops the bag, puts her hands to her mouth and screams. You know, he starts to have this experience where he's seeing all the reactions whenever he gets hit by this Cadillac. Right. And then he knows that he's going to die. He knows it's coming up. He wants to scream aloud, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, he's waiting for it.
Yeah, he's waiting for it. And he knows, you know, he's a 1976 Sedan DeVille. He sees it speeding up and everything. He hears the music. He hears what's starting up, and then it goes right past him, and he just nothing. You know, the guy grabs him, says, "Look out, little hero, the traffic will turn you into bratwurst." And Cadillac just goes right by. That's whenever he's, you know, he's screaming in his mind that he's alive, but in that duality screaming, "No, you're dead. You're dead in the street. They're all around you."
Right. That's
There's the man in black who pushed him, saying, "I'm a priest. Let me through."
One thing that I think's interesting about Jake, like, didn't you just feel sorry for him the whole time? Because we knew that he died and he just wants to get back to Roland. At the same time, Roland let him fall, but he's also going insane. It's not like he could live this way for the rest of his life. He's got to do something about it, you know?
Yeah.
And if it's bad enough to make you want to kill yourself because the voices just won't stop, you know, I was really feeling for the little guy. But he goes in there and meets these two guys, and I really like the stuff with the riddles. You know, he has got the book. He finds Charlie the Choo Choo. And I think both guys mentioned that they had it when they were kids, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
And
they said it was an older book, but in good condition. I don't know what that had to do with anything, but
he found Riddle Dee Dum, the riddle book, and he opens it up, and it says, "When is a door not a door? When it's ajar."
And that refers back to Truth essay, because that line's in it.
Right, and it's also cool because, you know, you're dealing with doors in this world also. It's a cool tie-in joke to everything.
Sure.
And, you know, he meets Calvin Tower, and Calvin Tower, I forget, what riddle does he give him as he leaves? Do you remember?
It's the one about Samson.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Samson and a lion got in attack, and Samson climbed up on a lion's back.
But the riddle was, out of the eater came forth meat, and out of the strong came forth sweetness.
Right.
Yeah, that's what that meant.
That thing's way over my head.
Yeah, I have no idea.
But he gives him the, "What can run but never walks, has a mouth but never talks, has a bed but never sleeps, has a head but never weeps." Were you like going, because I was.
Yeah, it was driving me crazy for a while.
You know what's crazy is I can, like, riddles like that, I can text message my dad, and I'll get a text message back within a minute of the answer. I don't know how he knows it, but it'll just give me the answer immediately. Which is
nice.
But you find it later on in the book anyway.
Yeah.
First of all, he finds this construction place, this Turtle Bay Luxury Condominiums. I love all these little tie-ins to the world. Like, you know, I'm also thinking earlier when Eddie finds a piece of wood, it reminds him where him and his brother would play.
Yeah.
And now Jake is in this place. I keep thinking they're on mirror sides of the world. Like, Eddie and them, they're in some kind of alternate universe, New York, in the same spot as Jake, in a way. And I,
yeah, absolutely.
And I know I'm not exactly right, but kind of right, right? It's kind of
I agree, yeah.
It's almost like same spots in those worlds where there's like a, to steal a line from Fringe, where the fabric is a lot thinner than in other places, where you're able to cross over. I don't know.
Wasn't that... Nah, never mind.
What?
There's, for some reason, I have a thing in my mind called a thinny, and it's like, I don't know why. Never mind.
I don't know. That's
I remember hearing that somewhere, that the spots where fabric and time overlap and are weaker in other places is called a thinny. And I think it was from a Stephen King book. I just can't remember which one.
Interesting. So Jake knows these things and he doesn't know why. And what did you think about the moment when he sees the rose?
There's a cool moment there, though, once he climbs over, that he sees that there's a sign that was faded, and it says Tom and Jerry's Artistic Deli, party platters our specialty. And that's whenever it ties right back to Eddie's dream. So Eddie goes through the building into the field of roses in the Dark Tower, and now Jake's at that same spot, and he discovers the rose and the key at the
I know. What the
hell? It's just like, whoa, hey, wait a second.
And I loved it. There's like, he hears a choir.
Once he sees the road, he hears the choir, right?
Right. He caught names in the group voice that sounded like people that Roland knew. You know, like Cuthbert, Martin, another might have been.
Oh, yeah, and Allie, the innkeeper in Tall.
Right. I guess it was basically trying to express to us everyone in existence that's come to pass Roland, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe, again, it's some sort of like psychic connection with Roland or with that world.
Right.
You know, how else would he know some of the things he wrote in his essay other than to have this bizarre connection with Roland's world?
Right.
So maybe somehow the people that Roland have come in contact or even passed on are trying to summon him.
Right. And what's interesting is he sees this key in front of the rose. And when he takes the key, the voices rise in a harmonic shout of triumph. Like, hey, yeah, I'm supposed to take this key.
Yes, finally.
Right. And what's interesting is everything is so beautiful. It almost looks like if you stare at the rose down to the very center where it's glowing, it's almost like there's a universe spinning inside of it. And there's voices everywhere. Like, you could see their faint outlines. And all of a sudden, there's this kind of ominous kind of feeling of danger. Kind of like in Eddie's dream, right?
Yeah.
And almost what part of me wonders is this. I don't know what the tower is yet. Or I know what its importance is, that it ties everything together. But there's something calling for help, and there's something not quite right.
That's why I think the thing that's calling for help is calling for help.
Right.
That for some reason, the tower's endangered.
And because of Roland and what he describes as a quartet, one of many, right?
Yeah.
And Jake is part of that quartet. It's bringing them together in whatever way it can. First it did with the drawing of the three through the doors, and now it's finding a way to bring Jake there also.
But this may be reaching, but the whole idea of the quartet, basically a group of destiny, in my own words, maybe everyone that has been connected to Roland in a form of quartet are now connected to each other. Like Roland's friends that he grew up with that were part of his quartet, they now have a connection with them, or Jake has a connection with them.
And they're maybe helping him along.
Maybe that's reaching. I don't know.
Yeah, I almost think of that when he sees, here's a choir and a spirit. He feels a presence. Maybe, for lack of a better term, the spirits, the dead ghost spirits of these people who were all part of the same quartet, but now they're dead, are helping him along to find them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just something I was thinking about.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that, but hey, whatever gets us through the book, right?
Exactly.
So, basically there's all this stuff about Jake. He wasn't sure if he was, he wakes up almost like it never happened, but it did happen because he still has the key and the rose is still there. And he almost feels like he needs to protect it, but he decides to leave. He's got to leave. He can't stay there looking at this rose all day, right?
Yeah. I think he goes home, and when they ask him what happened, he just...
He has a big argument with his family, don't they? They want to know where he was.
Well, he has a big argument with his father.
His clothes are dirty, and he actually has kind of a face-off with his dad, where he's not going to basically take shit from him anymore.
Yeah, his dad doesn't give him a chance to talk. He's just screaming at him, like, look at you, get in here, where the hell have you been? Your mother's just about to go off a rocker.
Yeah.
He doesn't even, whenever Jake would try to speak back, he just keeps yelling at him. You're bleeding. Where have you been? And then out of nowhere, Jake just kind of becomes aware about his father in this moment, about how he has feelings of puzzlement, fear, and like a version of weak, confused love, and
right.
It just, and then he figures out that there's two more feelings. It's anger, and what else was it? Mixed into these unpleasant feelings, that sense of anger and homesickness. It just, he doesn't know how to see this man. Like who is this? It's not even really his father. And he just says, let go of me. And the father just basically freaks out. Like, what did you say to me?
He basically sizes his dad up.
Yeah, he totally sizes him up. Like, who the hell do you think you are, buddy? I may have come from you, but you certainly aren't my father.
But the best part about all of this is, he's so worried about this report he did that he's going to be kicked out of school anyway or fail because of it. This ridiculous understanding the truth thing. But he gets the letter from the teacher. I thought it was hilarious how his teacher thought it was brilliant, basically. I forget, what does he say? Like, do these initials, I guess Roland, does that represent your father with the R? And I love how it also says, I find this extremely provocative. Or is this a name, a double symbol drawn both from your father and from Robert Browning's poem, Child Roland to the Dark Tower Came? This is not a question I would ask most students, but of course I know how omnivorously you read. I just thought it was hilarious that it mentions Child Roland to the Dark Tower Came.
I wasn't even aware of the poem until we started reading the book.
I love that it calls attention to it in the book, though.
Yeah.
If you were Jake, wouldn't you at least want to read the poem?
Yeah, I would... It's like, huh? Immediately look it up. Like, where the hell is it?
I need
to know more.
There's a poem with the name Roland in it and Dark Tower. I've got to read this.
Yeah.
Because I know a guy in another life where I died whose name is Roland, and he was after a Dark Tower. So I'm interested in this.
You have an outstanding job of merging S of C with symbolic language. Like, what?
Now, listen, I do not pretend to understand all the symbolism. Lady of the Shadows, Gunslinger, but it seems clear to yourself that you yourself are the prisoner, and the educational system is the speaking demon.
Wow.
Is it possible that both Roland and the Gunslinger are the same authority figure? Your father, perhaps? I became so intrigued by the possibility that I looked up his name in your records. I noted as Elmer. But I further note that his middle initial is R, I love how basically memory Tony about this film is art class where they analyze everything about a movie and they read way too much into things like JC, John Connor, Terminator, Jesus Christ. You know, it's just like, oh, wow, you figured that out. You know, it's just like you're really proud of yourself, aren't you? That's how they go analyzing.
Even the letter is just so self-congratulatory to the woman.
Yeah, like,
you know, you're saying you're impressed, but it's more about how you understood this.
Yeah, I understand this. I deciphered everything you wrote, and I find it very interesting.
Yeah, and the postscript. If you left school today because you had sudden doubts about my ability to understand a final essay of such unexpected richness, I hope I have assuaged them.
Yes, I shall be going back to school, mummy. They understand me there and my specialness.
obviously that the teachers have fallen into the trap of believing how self-important the Piper School is.
Yeah. Now, the best part, I love the moment when Jake sits down to read Charlie the Choo-Choo. And while he's reading it, he's also commenting to himself as he's reading it. You know, about Charlie. What was the guy's name, the engineer?
Engineer Bob.
Engineer Bob. And he's like, you need a shrink, Engineer Bob.
Yeah.
Others like, who is in the cab with me? I forget what it says. Boys and girls ran into their yards to watch Charlie and the Engineer Bob go by. Engineer Bob would smile and wave. The children would smile and wave back. Engineer Bob had a special secret. He was the only one who knew. Charlie the Choo-Choo was really, really alive. One day, while they were making the run between Topeka and St. Louis, Engineer Bob heard singing, very soft and low. Who's in the cab with me? And then Jake thinks, you need a shrink, Engineer Bob. I love that. And of course, you know, Charlie the Choo-Choo's talking to him. You know what's interesting? If you go back after you finish the book and read Charlie the Choo-Choo, Charlie and later on Blaine do talk in a very similar way.
Definitely. They both talk in riddles.
That kind of hearty har har.
Yeah.
So basically he's like, don't ask me silly questions. I won't play silly games. I'm just a simple choo-choo train and I'll always be the same. I only want to race along beneath the bright blue sky and be a happy choo-choo train until the day I die. How creepy is it that a kid's book is mentioning dying?
The choo-choo train that dies?
No, it's like, what? I love how he describes in the picture, Engineer Bob looks deranged.
Yeah. Well, so does Charlie the choo-choo.
Charlie the choo-choo looks evil. He's kind of like has an evil smile. And I love how he describes this picture of children who they're supposed to look like they're having a great time, but it almost looks like they're scared and they want to get off.
Yeah, like they're all screaming for their lives.
And in the book I have, it has a picture of Charlie the Choo-Choo in it, and it does look evil. It looks really creepy with human eyes. It even has, like, pupils, and it looks like it has braces on his teeth.
Yeah, that big grin, that evil grin.
And I love all the kids are crying.
It almost looks like, what was the clown from It?
Right, Pennywise.
Pennywise, yeah.
And I love, he's like, will you talk to me some more while we're making our run? I'd like that. I would too, said Charlie. I love you, Engineer Bob.
Wow.
I love you too, Charlie. Weird.
Charlie and Engineer Bob are codependent.
Yeah, big time. So basically, you know, it's the same story you've heard before where Charlie is put to rest because a new, faster
diesel train.
But basically what happens is Engineer Bob sabotages it so he can take Charlie out one more time until he finally dies. And remember, there's these weird tie-ins here. He goes from St. Louis to Topeka. Mr. Martin, by the way, a name we've heard before, the president of the Mid-World Railway Company, wrote and offered to put Engineer Bob in the peak seat of the new Burlington Zephyr. It's a fine loco, Engineer Bob, chock full of zip and zowie. You should be the one to pilot. Of all the engineers who work for Midworld, you are the best, and my daughter, Susanna, has never forgotten that you let her pull old Charlie's whistle. So there's Susanna, and it's funny later because doesn't Jake ask Susanna if her dad ran a railroad?
Yeah.
She's like, no.
He was in dental.
Yeah. It was just like, that's an interesting question, but no.
I love the line here. He's looking at the final picture. Looking at the final picture, it showed Charlie the Choo-Choo pulling two bunting-decked passenger cars filled with happy children from the roller coaster to the Ferris wheel. Engineer Bob sat in the cab, pulling the whistle cord and looking as happy as a pig in shit. Jake supposed Engineer Bob's smile was supposed to convey supreme happiness, but to him it looked like a grin of a lunatic. Charlie and Engineer Bob both looked like lunatics, and the more Jake looked at the kids, the more he thought that their expressions looked like grimaces of terror. Let us off this train, those faces seemed to say. Please, just let us off this train alive.
I thought that was awesome. I was just riveted to this whole chapter. I just thought it was so cool. I was like, what does all this mean? It's so awesome.
Yeah, there was so much. It's like you're dealing with this Jake's madness and his world and how miserable his world is, how he has no friends. The friends that he does have are barely his friends. His parents are absent. The only one that pays attention to him is a housekeeper, and she's just doing it because it's her job. You know, he has nothing in this world, and all he wants is to get back to Roland.
This is the point where he takes the key out of the book and holds it and realizes that the voices have stopped and he's at peace.
Yeah.
And he kind of he lays down and thinks, tell him to grab the key. The key makes the voices go. And we know he's telling Eddie that. And I love that Eddie, the very next page, you know, Eddie wakes up. Tell him to grab the key. The key makes the voices go. And I love this moment where he takes it. And the key's not done yet. You know, he's still just working on it. But it's still that piece of ash.
Yeah.
And he hands it to Roland.
Well, isn't Roland... He wakes up and Roland's down by the River Send. But they have this conversation that's kind of sad, actually. Or, you know, Eddie goes down and sees, you know, he's sad that he sees Roland not sleeping. And Roland asks Eddie if he can't sleep. And Eddie says, I almost was, but then I woke up. And he tries to talk to Roland. He's like, listen. And Roland just flat out tells him, I think I'm getting ready to die. And Eddie's just kind of blown away by that. And Eddie tries to talk, and Roland just tells him, silence. Just silence will be enough. An end to this. And that's when Eddie finally tells him that he's been making something. And Roland smiles and says, what is it? Are you finally ready to tell me? And Eddie says, you know, I think it's part of this quartet thing. Eddie, you know, shows him the key, and automatically Henry's voice comes back in his head. Like, that won't do any good. It's just a stupid piece of wood carving. He'll take one look at it and laugh. He'll laugh at you. And Eddie says, shut up.
Yeah.
And Roland looks at him like, what?
Huh?
He says, not you. And then this is another one. When Roland just gut punches Eddie and says, your brother comes to you often, doesn't he? And Eddie realizes, wow, how the hell did he know that? But, that's whenever he gives him the key and Roland grabs it, and Susanna comes down, and he's like, you know, what's going on? And Roland tells everyone to be quiet, and they're wondering, like, are you all right? And he's like, yeah, the voices are gone!
Yeah, and he has tears in his eyes.
Yeah, and they had never seen him weeping.
Yeah, I really liked that moment. And I love that, just that moment of relief when the voices are gone. He doesn't feel like he's going insane anymore. And all it says is Roland of Gilead was weeping. You know, the book starts and we know there's something wrong with Roland. At last, he is at peace and not going insane. The world is always throwing shit Roland's way, isn't it? To keep him down.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, he may be, the Dark Tower may be a magnet for him, but Roland's a magnet for misery.
There's a dream that night, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a dream. It's a huge dream.
Jake is having a vivid dream where he finds a sign that says, Traveler, Beyond Lives, Midworld. And this is where he encounters a young Eddie.
He wakes up, and he's walking... Well, he doesn't wake up, but in the dream, he's walking through the forest that the book begins in. You know, dead zone of fallen trees, scruffy, aggravating bushes, and he sees this path through them. And before he gets through it, he sees the letters were carved into it, but they were so eroded he couldn't make them out. And it says, "Traveler, beyond lies Midworld." He may be sleeping and dreaming this, but the next line it says, "Sleeping in his bed, Jake drew his knees up against his chest, the hand holding the key right under his pillow, and now his fingers tighten their grip on it." So he may be sleeping, but I think he's like physically experiencing this. Like,
right.
Maybe he's entered one of those umbilical, you know, type where his consciousness is transferred into that world or something.
Or the person in his dream is Eddie telling him that he has to find him, basically.
Yeah, Eddie is a young boy, probably close to Jake's age.
Oh, and
I love the boy Eddie's T-shirt. Never a dull moment in Midworld.
And I love it, as he's about to finally disappear, Eddie, he says, "A river." And he just answered the riddle.
Yeah.
About what can run but never walks, has a mouth but never talks, has a bed but never sleeps, has a head but never weeps. The end. Good book.
Yeah, really. And Eddie, you know, it's crazy how Eddie, as the kid, tells him that the portal, you know, the portal of the bear is also in Brooklyn. And he tells him, you know, be here at a certain place, but watch out for Henry. You know, strangers make Henry nervous. And Jake's just like, who the hell is Henry?
Like, what the hell are you talking about?
No, and he's like, how will I find you? It's so weird that Eddie as a child is now communicating with Jake. I don't know if it later on in the book, it doesn't Eddie have the same dream?
Right. He tells Roland that, you know, he thinks he's encountering the boy he calls Jake. And I think he's coming here. The next day, Jake wakes up and he packs his stuff, including Riddle D Dum and Charlie the Choo Choo. He leaves a note for his parents and he takes his dad's home defense weapon, the .44 Ruger automatic, and packs it away with some bullets. I was like, all right, this kid's thinking now. They're definitely going to need an extra gun over there. Oh, you know what I love? The next day when Eddie and Roland wake up and they're, you know, there's a lot of them traveling, right? And I love, this is the first moment we see with a strange creature walking. It looks like a badger crossed with a raccoon. I laughed out loud at this. He goes, "What's that, Roland?" And he goes, "A Billy Bumbler." No good to eat, tough, sour. I'd rather eat dog.
Susanna, have you eaten dog?
And he, of course, he nods, but he does not elaborate. Oh, I love it. So they found a road and they're walking down it. So anyway, what's cool is they find the same sign that Jake saw in his dream that said, "Traveler, beyond lies Midworld." And I'm wondering this. When I think of a world, I'm thinking of a whole planet, right?
Yeah.
So if there's our world, Midworld, and in the first book in The Gunslinger, did they mention what world that was at all?
Wasn't it Endworld?
Endworld. Like, I want to see a map of the way these things look.
Yeah, so like I'm trying to... The only way I can think of it is like a map to Middle Earth.
Right.
You know, like the different sections of Middle Earth.
And what's interesting, you know, I read about that Clifford D. Simak book that's mentioned in... I haven't read the book, but I've read about it because of it's mentioned in Low Men in Yellow Coats. And the whole thing of that is you could almost think of the Earth. In the center of a clock is the sun, and the numbers are the planets in rotation, right? And
yeah. And
in each of those numbers is a different version of you living in those, all spinning, and they never catch up to each other because they're all moving at the same time.
Sure.
Or whatever. So I'm wondering if these are like three, these are worlds that all move at the same time, so they never encounter each other, but they do because of these portals. I don't know. I need to just stop talking.
Or it could just be as simple as, you know, separated areas that's, you know, instead of states, they have end world, mid world, and whatever world.
It's one world, but like instead of Texas, they would call it South World or something. I don't know.
South World sounds like a...
Yeah, not very inventive, but...
A amusement park.
And, you know, even Eddie, he goes, what is Midworld? And Roland says, one of the large kingdoms which dominated the earth in the times before these. A kingdom of hope and knowledge and light. The sort of things we were trying to hold on to in my land before the darkness overtook us. So it's like he tells you something, but also this is not really telling you anything.
Yeah, he's basically saying, this is Rohan.
Yeah, this is a place that used to be awesome, but now it's...
Now it sucks!
Totally sucks and scary if you go in
the old place totally fucked everything up.
I love how there's this ominous tone to things, like old shacks and stuff. Roland tells him how they could be haunted and stuff like that. It's like, you can't just...
Yeah, that border beyond supernatural and natural has totally been muddled.
Right. And it's just like, you can't just go wandering anywhere in this place.
No, because you could step right into your death.
Meanwhile, on the other side, Jake is trying to find his... He doesn't even know where to go anymore. The voices have stopped. He's just kind of wandering around. He goes to a museum, encounters people.
Yeah. He acts like he's part of a group of kids.
And remember, at one point, he mentions Marquis Academy. He doesn't know where that came from. But it turns out later that the name Marquis is a street. Oh, and we can't forget about the part where the cop stops him.
And yes.
He thinks the jig is
up. I think that happens even before the high speech moment. Or maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
And, you know, he's trying to get out of it, but Jake is just too suspicious being in that side of town when he should be in school. So he just holds out the key, and people just start staring at it like they're attracted to it.
Yeah, like they're hypnotized by it. Like, it changes everything. It's like the Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy, and he uses that time to get away. And so, oh, by the way, I can't forget about this, is the Dark Crystal and the Last Starfighter are mentioned.
Yes!
Which I thought was cool. But, well, they put two and two together that Jake is trying to come over, and they have to be in the right spot at the right time, the same time as Jake, otherwise he could die. So it's very serious shit, right?
Yeah.
Eddie's telling Roland about his dreams and where they're at, and it reminds him of that place where that old haunted house was. What was it, just on Dutch Hill?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, shit, I think that's the place where the kid's going to come through. And Roland's like, very likely, they're thin places, and they're also attractive places. So places like haunted houses and stuff, they're thin to the worlds.
There you go.
A thinny. And it's funny because in Fringe, that's kind of mentioned too. There are certain places where the worlds are much more thin layer to other worlds. So obviously these people have been reading some Stephen King, right?
I wonder if there will be a Dark Tower in Fringe. That would blow my mind.
That would be awesome. So, or if the Observer's in right now in Midworld in the background somewhere, they just don't notice them.
Maybe the Observer's a gunslinger.
I couldn't imagine Roland not noticing someone watching him, though. He always seems to know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, there's a bald guy. He's like, he's been following us for days.
He knows it, but never mentions it.
Yeah, he's basically like... oh, shit, I can't remember his name. The stupid guy from Lord of the Rings. The precious guy.
Precious.
Oh, Gollum.
Yeah, he's like
Smeagol.
Gollum.
Roland.
So anyway, back to the book. What's cool is when Jake finally sees Eddie and Henry, I love the little bits where he's kind of following them incognito with his dad's sunglasses on.
They're way too big for him.
And he's at a movie theater where he sees a spaghetti western festival. He sees a poster of Clint Eastwood as a man of no name, and he's like, close, but not quite him. But pretty close, you know? And you get to see how Henry torments people. He doesn't just torment Eddie. He torments all children, it seems like.
Yeah.
Even the...
I mean, he torments everyone that... everyone, yeah. He feels threatened by anybody if, like, they're reading or if they have a job or, you know, he's just an asshole.
Yeah, I love that. And even, like, Jake... He's, you know, he's a lot younger than both of them, and just by looking at Henry, he knows how pathetic he is, and he sees how Eddie kind of downplays everything so his brother doesn't know he's better. Like, he hides the fact that he's better all the time. He sees how they pathetically play basketball and how Eddie could run circles around him, but then always loses on purpose. And then
he gives him a run for it, but then at the end just gives up.
Right. And then on the other side, Eddie's having major doubts. He's getting really scared that he can't complete this key perfectly, and the boy's fate lies in his hands, and he's doubting everything. And of course, Roland is doing the tough love thing on him, right?
And yeah, that's what some Roland seems to be the best at.
And I love how he's like, you know, remember the face of your father. He's like, my father was an asshole.
Asshole, yeah.
I don't give a dick about my father. Is this where they find that the stones in the ground? What do you call
it? The speaking circle, I think.
Yeah, the speaking circle.
Or speaking stones. So yeah, and he says that's where it's a dangerous place. That's where the demons reside or whatever.
So essentially what I love about this part of the book is it's all building up, right? Can Eddie do it? Can Jake do it? We keep being given hints about the danger that Jake will be in. Remember, Eddie in the dream told him that there's much danger, that he has to be careful. As soon as he sees this haunted house, he senses it, how evil the place is.
There's something up with this place.
Yeah. Also, Roland tries to build them up like, hey, when we enter this place, there's going to be a demon. He's going to try to have sex with us. It's going to be horrible. So, hey, who's with me, huh, guy?
Yeah.
This is going to be awesome, right?
I thought the speaking ring. Speaking ring.
You know what? Isn't it funny, though, the speaking ring? Because of the gunslinger, when they see the speaking ring, I was like, oh, shit. We're going to have another demon and some sex. Because that's the only way you can deal with a star slut. But this wasn't a star slut. It was a male demon, I think, wasn't it?
A star man whore?
Yeah, man whore. Star man whore. So, and Susanna said, that looks like Stonehenge. So basically, you know, you can close your eyes and picture
Stonehenge. I'm never going to Stonehenge.
You know what's funny? Heather was watching this thing on different places. It was about like art, outdoor art. And the main thing it was talking about Stonehenge, I was like, that's no art. That's a speaking ring. There's a demon in there who'll try to have sex with you. What are you talking about? Nah, never mind. So, you know, just me. That's what Stephen King will do to you. You start to relate to things in the
real exactly.
World.
These books get so embedded into your head that you can never look at things the same way again.
And I was really worried about Jake here because it's kind of scary, wasn't it?
It was quite scary, actually. It's, you know, having to go into this house and, you know, it was alive. The house is alive.
They're going to encounter this demon in the speaking ring. Roland pretty much says, we're going to need Detta for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so bad for Susanna in this whole part. Because basically she has to have sex with the demon.
That can't be enjoyable.
Well, Eddie, he is busy with the door, right?
Yeah.
And then
the key in the door.
The key in the door. And then Jake on the other side, he's exploring this haunted house at the same time. And it's a really creepy house. And there's spiders. Isn't that the first thing he encounters that's really scary is the spiders?
Well, I think the first thing he encounters is really scary is just the house. Because he says that as soon as he saw the place, he understood two things. First, that he had seen it before in dreams so terrible his conscious mind would not let him remember. And second, that it was a place of death and murder and madness.
Right.
So, and you got to think, what the hell is going on at this place?
There was even childhood rumors that all kids had heard that people had been murdered in there before, right?
Yeah, the people that go in never come out again.
And so at the same time, they're in the speaking ring. And there's other shit happening. I love that it says Susanna with the demon as he enters. She forced herself to relax her thighs. Immediately they spread apart, pushing long curved fans in the dirt. She threw her head back into the rain, which is now pelting down, and sensed its face lolling just over hers. Eager eyes drinking in every contorted grimace which passed over her face.
Yeah, the ooh.
But it says... Ugh. She reached up with one hand as if to slap, and instead slid it around the nape of her demon rapist neck. Oh, yeah, okay. Good times.
Well, you know, it's funny that she understood what needed to be done, because Roland told her, listen, you can't let this thing be pleasured by you.
Yeah, you can't.
You have to act like you're being pleasured from it, and you take away its power.
And I love it. She starts dominating the thing and scaring the shit out of it. Like, let me go. She's like, no,
Even demons can't handle Detta Walker.
Yeah, Detta Walker scares the shit out of even demons. I love it. It's like, dude, all right, I got to go now. I'll call you sometime, Detta.
Yeah.
No, you ain't going nowhere, Honk Moffa. Let's talk about the plaster man. The walls and the plaster start coming to life. I love the build-up here, didn't you, of the back and forth between both worlds of them. They got the demon here and Eddie. It's pouring rain. He's trying to carve a door into the mud, and he makes a keyhole. Jake keeps trying to get closer and closer. You know, he finds the hallway as this creature, strange-looking. The book describes it as Plaster Man, right?
Yeah.
Is trying to get Jake. And it nearly gets him a couple times, grabbing his feet and stuff, and at one point, he gets the key in the door. Oh, yeah. Doesn't Eddie get the key in the door? And then Jake almost does, but he drops it through the floorboards.
Yeah.
And even at one point, Eddie realizes the key's not right because it won't turn. So he has to pull it back out and start carving again.
Yeah, and he has to calm himself. And what's crazy is he just makes one little shave off of it.
Yeah.
And that's all it needed.
He just kind of looks at it and he's concentrating. He's just like, shh. And that was enough. And then Jake is trying to get away from the demon. I think he loses his shoes, doesn't he?
He does.
Doesn't Jake open the door and he sees just mud and stuff
there?
Yeah,
what's great is that, you know, he's having this moment where he's, you know, he finally gets the key and he can hear, you know, Roland screaming, like, hurry up, Jake, for Christ's sake, move it. He's fighting through this thing and it's talking about how they call him the doorkeeper. I guess it's the Plaster Man as the doorkeeper. It's grinning at him and ripping at him, and he opens the door, and all he sees is dirt and roots.
That's when Eddie doesn't quite have the key right, and finally he does, and they open it up. And essentially what Roland does is he tells Susanna to let go of the demon as he's holding it.
Yeah.
And he releases it into the Plaster Man and gets Jake out. And there's like a huge release when Jake is finally on the other side and him and Roland are together. I love that. Jake says, you won't let me drop this time. And he says, no, not this time, not ever again. That's like, oh, we can all relax.
But he knows in his heart that even though he promises that, he can't guarantee it because promises. Everything's for the tower.
Right. And I love the little introductions of Susanna and Eddie to Jake. I thought it was great. When all of a sudden Jake is there with them and adds to their little family.
Yeah, and he asks them, you know, have you found the train yet? And I think Eddie says, no, no train. And he asks Roland, are the voices gone? And Roland's like, yeah, all gone. Yours? And he says, gone. I'm all together again. We both are. And that was great.
And, you know, he tells Jake, I'll never leave you again. And his own tears came. I swear to you on the names of all my fathers, I'll never leave you again. Yet his heart, that silent, watchful, lifelong prisoner of Ka, received the words of this promise, not just with wonder, but with doubt. So,
and then it's his book two, Ludd.
Yeah, good old Ludd. What an awesome place, huh? Wouldn't you love to vacation there?
Ah, it sounds gorgeous.
And, you know, basically it's like the next day, don't we get to meet this little Billy Bumbler who shows up?
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of Oi, the character of Oi?
I love Oi. Yeah, the moment they introduced Oi, I was like, oh, awesome.
And I think I skipped over the fact that earlier in the book when they're eating this, deer meat wrapped in spinach leaf or something like that?
Yeah, a leaf that tastes a lot like a spinach.
And Eddie gave it the name of a gunslinger burrito.
I'm going to do that one day. I'm gonna get like some pemmican beef jerky and then wrap it in spinach leaves and serve it as an hors d'oeuvre called gunslinger burritos.
Basically, Jake befriends Oi, and Roland talks about how they don't much talk anymore, but this one seems to talk a lot. And he has some wounds on him. Maybe the other Billy Bumblers didn't like him talking so much and cast him out.
So it looked like a combination between a raccoon and a woodchuck.
Yeah, I gotta see this.
With a dash of dachshund thrown in for good measure. Oi! The Billy Bumbler replied at once.
This is my favorite part. Roland is telling Jake about Billy Bundlers. He said, "They weren't good for much except amusing the children and keeping a rat population down. They can be quite faithful, or were in the old days, although I never heard of one that would remain as loyal as a good dog. The wild ones are scavengers, not dangerous, but a pain in the ass." And right then, Oi goes, "Ass!" Eddie comes out and he kind of scares him away, but Roland's like, "Nah, he'll be back."
Yeah, it's they're walking and it's like, "I think we have an extra."
Right. I loved Eddie's kind of dynamic with Jake also, how he jokes with him and stuff.
Yeah, and I don't think Roland quite understands Eddie's sense of humor.
Right.
Like, he thinks he's almost being rude to Jake.
Here's an interesting bit. They find this kind of riverside town, right? Mm-hmm. And Susanna, is this an ability of hers, or does she have a grand imagination where she can imagine the way things were in the past? She sees them when people were there, they're populated, and what it really was, like a trading town and all this?
It could be, you know, her gift.
Because I kept wondering, because she, in such vivid detail, she would see the way things were, and I started to think, does she have a grand imagination, or does she have a power to see the past? I don't know.
Or, like, interpret the energy as it once was, almost like see, like, in a ghostly way what it was like.
And Eddie's like, "Have you ever heard of Lud?" And Roland says, "When I was small." And Eddie's like, "It rhymes with crud." Is this where they see the stoplight, like a Keystone Cops traffic light?
Yeah, it is.
Where it sticks the flag out and stuff. That's what I love, how they encounter this strange old technology that seems kind of advanced in a way, but it's ancient and doesn't work anymore. Whoever exists now in that world doesn't know how to work any of this.
This is whenever Roland says we have company, and he points at the building that looked like the county courthouse, and the man wearing bib overalls and a huge straw sombrero, and the woman walked with one hand clamped on his naked sunburned shoulder. And I guess the old woman's blind, and she realizes that Roland's a gunslinger when he says, "We mean you no harm," in the high speech.
Right.
And she says, "A gunslinger, for God, I knew it were, I knew." And I think this is where they take them in.
They meet old mother. And I love, this is where they're kind of fascinated, Eddie and Susanna, of how Roland acts around them. Like, wow, he's not just a gunslinger like what you would think of as a gunfighter. He seems to be like this. He can talk to people. He's a diplomat.
Yeah, he's like an ambassador.
Yeah, he's an ambassador, and he knows how to communicate, and he puts everyone at ease, and he's someone to be respected as soon as you see him. And they lead them into this kind of hidden garden area, which I thought was really cool, that they keep hidden from outsiders. Everything looks decrepit on the outside, but in this place, they're growing, you know, flowers, and they've got food, and they treat them to this nice big meal, which I thought was awesome.
And they may not have a lot, but because the gunslinger shows up, it's like, wow, this is huge.
I love
this
the way
the one last big meal before the world moves on.
Didn't you love the way old mother talked? The way she spoke?
Yeah, it was like in that, I guess it was in a form of high speech.
It's just like, "I, gunslinger, fair spoken. They'll set us on by the league, so they shall." It's like, what the hell is she talking about?
It's like old English mixed with, like, old West.
They got to stuff their faces. And it's all old people, too. That's another thing. It seems like. And we get to meet Bill and Till.
Were those twins? The albinos?
Yeah.
And I love that they were elderly. Like you said, everyone's old. So this is just a scene I would love to see.
I know. And the blind girl, Mercy, won't keep her hands off the gunslinger. Like, she keeps hugging him and stuff like that. They keep telling her to mind her manners.
And she's an old woman.
And she even wants to touch his face, doesn't she? And they're like, "No, go away.
Leave him alone."
This is what I love, is he has a talk with him and asking him about what goes on in Lud. and how they haven't been there for years, but there was a staining bridge, and they tell them that they, at one time, they had, I mean, for lack of a better term, they had some kind of technology. They had guns. They had bombs, things that blew up, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake asked them about Blaine, and they're like, how would you know of Blaine? Blaine the Mono. And he's like, Mono? And that's when they put two and two together that it was a monorail. And remember, Eddie, in the back of his mind, doesn't he kind of hope that it's some kind of city that, hey, we can get some food there, and people will help us out. And
maybe, you know, maybe it won't have moved on yet.
Right, but of course he's wrong.
Yeah.
Eddie was kind of being sarcastic, but they talked of a, they had lights or things that, they were like candles, but you'd push a button and they'd come on. Electric candles. And Eddie goes, imagine that. Wonderingly. And Susanna pinches him. Yes. You pushed a button and they came on. Bright, heatless candles with airy wicks and reservoirs for oil. And I've heard it said that once in the old days. Quick, the outlaw prince actually flew up into the sky in a mechanical bird. But one of its wings broke off, and he died in a great fall like Icarus. You know the story of Icarus? Aye, lady. I think it's funny how they know similar stories. Isn't that interesting?
It really is. It's there's some sort of bizarre connection, but it's like they get the gist of things, but things are slightly different.
Right. It's almost like, you know, the sticks and stones may break my bones. And I forget, what does Roland say?
But names will never wound me.
Yeah, names will never wound me. That's close. But it's like when they later on when they encounter a plane, and it turns out to be a Nazi plane, and Eddie brings up, well, there's places like the Bermuda Triangle where planes disappear in boats. I don't know, that kind of gets your imagination going, like, what could that mean?
Yeah, that like the Bermuda Triangle is a thinny.
Yeah, it's a
where these planes are coming through and
they fly right into
a Nazi plane. And
yeah, that was crazy.
Where the hell did that come from?
So basically, what they find out from these people is that they they kind of debate whether going to Lud or not. And Jake tells them that it's Kaw. They have to go because they must encounter the train. He knows it because he has these dreams where the train comes for him in Oi, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very interesting, you know, how the town, when they all see them off, you know, after they eat, how kind of sad it is when they all gather around them. They just feel so bad for these old people they have to leave behind who treated them so well. And they see this kind of, they circle around the gunslinger.
Mm-hmm. And Roland asks for the blessing from the old mother. She gives him her silver cross.
Right.
And puts it around him.
Doesn't he first say, no, no, no? And she's like, she doesn't need it anymore? Or
yeah.
I thought that was a really cool moment.
And she tells him, go now. We have broken bread. We have held palaver. We have your blessing and you have ours. Go your course in safety. Stand and be true. And her voice trembled and broke on the last word. Roland rose to his feet, then bowed and tapped his throat three times. Thank you, Si.
Didn't you love all that?
Yeah, I love the tradition in the language. It's so vivid and cool.
Thank you, Si, gunslinger. And you know, after they leave this place, one of my favorite parts in the whole book is when Roland decides they need to all sit down and have a talk. You know, after they leave the, what did they call it, river crossing or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
On their way to Lud, don't they? Is that when they start hearing the drums?
I think.
And you kind of made your own version of this, right?
I did.
Because when they hear these drums, Eddie's like, there's something familiar about this drum beat, which I thought was hilarious.
It's got a rock and roll backbeat.
He's like, I know what it is. Take away the guitars, and that's what you got left. In fact, it sounds like ZZ Top. Susanna's like, ZZ who? I'll be goddamned if that doesn't sound like the backbeat to something like Sharp Dressed Man or Velcro Fly. Velcro Fly? Jake said. That's a stupid name for a song. pretty funny, though. You missed it by 10 years or so.
It's such a terrible song.
It is. But you stripped it down just for the drums, right?
Yeah, I did.
So let's go ahead and check this out. This is what the drums were like. So they hear basically something like this from the distance coming from Ludd. And it's like,
wait, that's kind of freaky.
It's like, what the hell? At first I would think, are they having a party down there?
I know, it does. It's...
Do the Velcro fly. Awesome.
They might as well just call it Easy Access Sex.
Yeah, I guess so. Those guys weren't really good on innuendo, were they?
No, they were just kind of right out there. But it does, it sounds like tribal drums.
Totally.
Like, so they're thinking, okay, there's something going on there. We don't know what it is, but there's something.
So the next day, they see the bridge. And Eddie says it looks like the George Washington Bridge.
Yeah, and Jake has this moment like, what's the GWB doing in Missouri? And they just kind of look at it like,
sport?
What?
Yeah. Midworld, I mean. Yeah, it looks like it's falling apart. It doesn't look as... It's funny, because at a distance, it'd say, hey, that's in pretty good shape. But as you get closer, it's like, oh, shit, that thing's not in too good a shape.
That's got to be insane. Be like, oh, so we got to cross this?
Right. And I love when Roland says, we need to have a talk or whatever, and they all sit down. I love the moment he's like, we are quartet, which means a group of people bound together by fate. The philosophers of my land said a quartet could only be broken by death or treachery. My great teacher, Court, said that since death and treachery are also spokes on the wheel of Ka, such a binding can never be broken. As the years pass, I see more, I come more and more to Court's way of looking at it. Each member of a quartet is like a piece of a puzzle. Taken by itself, each piece is a mystery, but when they are put together, they make a picture, or part of a picture. It may take a great many quartets to finish one picture. You mustn't be surprised if you discover your lives have been touching you in ways you haven't seen until now. For one thing, each of you three is capable of knowing each other's thoughts. I love it. He's like, what? It's funny. I just read Eddie cried, what? But I picture it as, what?
Yeah.
It's true. You share your thoughts so naturally that you haven't even been aware it's happening. And then they kind of remember, you know, Susanna, remember when I spoke to you in the circle? Yeah. Hey, wait, you didn't even move your mouth. Eddie, you remember when that bat thing was flying at your head and I told you to get down? I didn't even open my mouth. And then Jake remembers when Roland yelled to him from the other world, or the fact that even Eddie and Jake could communicate through dreams and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool. And the fact that he talks about the fact that many quartets may, you know, have to exist to form one picture, because then you think of Roland's old quartet.
Yeah.
We're now all dead.
And they're all on the same quest.
And what did he call it? Sharing Kef?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they tell him about Shardik. But that's the name of a book in our world. It's written by the man who wrote that famous book about rabbits. Richard Adams! The book about the bunnies was Watership Down. I knew that name. Or I knew that name. That's hilarious.
Eddie's like, how can people in your world know about things in our world? And Roland just says, there are doors, aren't there? We've already seen four of them already. Do you think they never existed before and never will again?
Right.
So there's obviously people that have moved from one world to the other.
Right.
And back again. And that's, you know, that's how I think later in the book we find that maybe that's how the person that wrote Charlie the Choo-Choo, you know, wrote it about Blaine the Mono.
That's very interesting and creepy, isn't it? Hey, yeah. I'm going to turn that story into a children's book.
So I guess they're telling each other's stories.
Yeah, they're telling each other's stories, and Jake tells a story about Charlie the Choo-Choo. And I think it's funny, Eddie and Susanna both say that they own the book. Hey, I had that book. And they're curious if it's the same exact book they owned.
Yeah, Jake tells his part of the story, tell him about his essay, My Understanding of Truth, and how he had seen the turtle of enormous girth on a show He Holds the Earth. If you want to run and play, come along the beam today. Spray painted outside the Turtle Bay condominiums. So they're going over all these connections between his world and their worlds.
So basically what it comes down to is Jake tells him about Charlie the Choo-Choo and Blaine the Mono. And that's basically when Jake says that they can't go around the city. They have to go. And that's when there's a big moment between Roland and Eddie about the seriousness of this and how he's trying to tell Roland. He's like, look, I know you keep a lot to yourself, but I got to tell you that I'm all in this, man. Me and Susanna, we're in this. We're with you. And you can't keep things from us, right? You know, be truthful with us. We know how serious this is, and we want to see it to the end. He's basically telling him he wants to see the tower.
I think he's just, now that everything has become so real, everything needs to be out in the open. They need to be able to trust one another, you know, not hold things from one another. Eddie's now more confident, you know, whereas before he wouldn't say exactly what he was doing. Now he knows that because everything's connected, they can't hold secrets from one another.
He says, it's not your trouble, it's our trouble. Basically, he's just saying that we're all one, you know, don't, you know, keep things from us like we don't need to know. You know, they're kef mates, right?
They are a quartet.
We are quartet. When they get to the bridge, on their way to the bridge, they find an airplane.
Yes.
And this is where we talked about before, like, they peel off this emblem, which is like a fist and a lightning bolt, and it's a Nazi sign. They're kind of freaking out about that, and that's when, you know, Eddie kind of speculates on the Bermuda Triangle and stuff like that. And he's like, fasten your seatbelts, prepare for turbulence. You're flying into the Roland Zone.
really, it sums so much up about the situation they're in, how absolutely off-centered everything is in this world.
Oh, and that's when Roland tells the story of Lord Perth, a giant who went forth to war with 1,000 men, but he was still in his own country when a little boy threw a stone at him and hit him in the knee. He stumbled, and the weight of his armor bore him down, and he broke his neck. And
yeah.
Jake's like, that's like David and Goliath.
Exactly.
It's interesting. I mean, we have like similar stories in both worlds, which is really cool. And also, they start talking about riddling, and I thought all this was fascinating. Roland is talking about their fair day, where they would do this riddle and court.
Yeah, and how serious it was.
Whoever won got to carry home the goose. And court, I mean, did it say court had killed a few people in this thing?
Yeah.
Like, if you were known to be cheating or somehow, you'd have to suggest your riddle, and if it was good enough. So basically, it was competitions for riddles, and Eddie's like, why did the dead baby cross the road? Because it was stapled to a chicken, and like Roland is completely offended by this. Pardon me for saying so, Eddie, but that is rather silly.
Jesus. Just in that correction, it's like, whoa. You know, it's so simple yet so serious. Like, he really pissed him off.
Yeah, he's like, I keep forgetting your sense of humor got shot off in the Children's Crusade. I take riddling seriously. I was taught that the ability to solve them indicates a sane and rational mind. But basically, you know, he's kind of saying how important riddles are in this world.
Yeah, they may be child's play to Eddie, but in Roland's world, they're life and death.
Jake says, you know, he's got this book, Riddle to Dumb. I carried it over. And he's like, this guy, Mr. Tower. And all of Roland's like, what was his name? Calvin Tower. Didn't I tell you that? Not subtle, was it?
Yeah, the connections are obvious at this point.
Riddling is an art form to them. It's very important to a gunslinger.
It's almost like a gun duel, riddling.
Right, and it came, you know, it was some serious shit. And as they were talking about different riddles, I realized that I suck at riddles, man.
Oh, so do I.
It's so bad.
I'll look at the words and just, I just get dumbfounded.
And doesn't Jake go, when is a door not a door? and when it's ajar, and there's like very good riddle. But I love that. I was just fascinated by the riddle stuff. I thought it was very cool. Just another piece to this world, and I just thought it was so interesting. And it's funny, there's a part when the drums start up again and Eddie starts singing. He starts whispering himself Velcro Fly. You need just enough of that sticky stuff to hold the seam on your fine blue jeans. I say, yeah, yeah. When I read that, I was like, God, those lyrics are awful.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Who has Velcro on their blue jeans? That's so 80s.
Sticky stuff? What is he talking about? It's like, what could that song Pearl Necklace be about? I don't know. It's about jewelry, I guess.
Yeah, it's about a gift.
Yeah. Here's a nice necklace. Those guys are true poets, aren't they?
ZZ Top. Completely unsubtle. Yeah. Lyrical geniuses.
At this point in the book, I got to ask you, were you loving the book?
Oh, yeah.
Were you totally into it? Like,
yeah, once, you know, all the little connections, the Jake stuff, now they're in this, I really, really loved the moments with the old mother and everything in that little village, and, you know, to add Oi to the equation, just kind of this much-needed comic relief in the middle of all this serious death and darkness.
I seriously loved Eddie and Roland playing off each other. I love when Roland makes a joke and Roland doesn't get it, or he gets annoyed with Eddie. Yeah. You know, that just stuff, I just love it. I thought it was gold. They make this way to this huge bridge with pieces out. And the bridge crossing, I thought, was really just very...
suspenseful.
Very suspenseful, very detailed. The wind gusting and how scary it was. And I mean, for Christ's sake, Susanna is still in a friggin' wheelchair. You know, sometimes you forget about that as you're reading. Oh, shit, she's in a wheelchair. They have to cross this friggin' thing and strap her to Roland. It was just really crazy. And then the part where an Oi is about to fall and he grabs onto Jake's hand and he has to bite down at the same time. You know, he's bit a huge gash into Jake's hand. That's all crazy shit. And all of it, there's this huge distraction. Jake's going to fall. Oi's going to fall. They're pulling him up. And all of a sudden, Gasher is standing there. This creepy, shirtless guy with sores all over his face. And he has like a yellow bandana and an eye patch.
Pirate.
Ugh. And he wants to take the boy. How creepy was that?
And creepy's an understatement with Gasher.
And the reason that... Roland can't just outright shoot him as he's got a hand grenade.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, you know, if he drops it, it still might take out the bridge. So, you know, basically, that's just that whole part when Gasher has Jake is so nerve wracking, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some, you know, he calls Jake a certain term that we won't repeat. Listeners read themselves.
As I was reading it, I would do that. It would be like, ugh.
Yeah, it's just such a vile character. Like, how these people have digressed into this odd, like, pansexual, degrading personalities. It's just, ugh.
Yeah. And I love how he describes the grenade. You know, he's like, do you know what I've got here, my dear ones? I just imagine he talks like that. Do your kin watch your old friend Gasher just happens to lay his hands on? It's a Granado. Something pretty the old folks left behind. It's Granado. Uno Granado! But it's like, holy shit, that dude's got a friggin' hand grenade.
I knew it. Red Dawn took place in their world.
Yeah. Wolverines! Pubes! They said pubes instead of Wolverines. Yeah, that was a little unstable term for them, isn't it? We're the pubes! It's like,
peoples.
Oh, good for you guys. So the grays are the older people, right?
Yeah.
And the pubes, I guess, are the adolescent kind of gangs.
Yeah, like prepubescents.
Prepubescent scumbags, I guess. I mean, he just keeps hitting Jake, punching him in the back of the head, kicking him. He even tries to kick and kill Oi, but Oi gets away.
Yeah. you know, Roland says, come on, you know, once Gasher's out of the picture, and Eddie's just like, how could you do that?
It's like, what, is he going to let him throw a grenade on the friggin' bridge, and they would all be dead? Because remember, that's one thing that Gasher expresses. He's like, look at me, I'm dying. I'm a friggin' puss bag ready to drop dead. And you know what's funny is later on, Gasher shows that he doesn't really want to die, doesn't he?
No.
That kind of comes across there.
He's got a death wish, but he doesn't want to die.
So he tells Susanna and Eddie to find Blaine, to find the train. You know, they're like, what happens? What if we run into trouble? He goes, then you remember the face of your father. Basically saying, then, you know, you light up the joint, man. You start blowing people away is what happens.
I taught you. You can handle it.
And as Jake and Gasher are running through this weird maze of crap and stuff, there's a couple of traps that have been set. Wasn't it going to drop a piano? No, it was a fountain, like hanging overhead that would drop on you if you stepped in the wrong spot. And then later on, there's more shit, like crate, or maybe it's the crates first and then the fountain later.
Yeah, what I love, though, is how Roland outsmarts all of them, and yet Gasher's like, oh, yeah, we got him that time. It's like, oh, okay, you're underestimating your enemy. Like, how could, I mean, is Gasher's mind, or is that area so far gone that they don't? They just don't even know what a gunslinger is? Or
yeah, it's just like, come on, you can do better than this. And I love how he finds Oi, too. Didn't you like that? Oi comes up to him and he helps him find Jake.
Yeah, Olin.
Now, one of the best parts here is as they're going through this place that has been decorated with bodies and stuff, Susanna and Eddie are going along this place. He's pushing in the wheelchair. And don't they even hear, like, cheers and stuff in the distance? Like, and the drums are going. It almost sounds like people are having a swell old time. But really what they're doing is when the tribal drums happen, they execute one of their kind as, like, an offering, right?
Yeah, it's time for a sacrifice to the god drums.
Yeah, those people are really pathetic, aren't they?
Well, it's how people revert back to, like, this weird common idiocism. It just they think, well, you know, if this keeps happening, oh, that must be just superstitions. I don't understand how it can happen, but you know it does.
A little boy comes running at them. Hey, he's waving to them. He seems to want to say hi, right? But it turns out when he's like kind of, it's almost like he has to like blink for a second and then look again. And it's a friggin' midget with a hand grenade running towards him. It's like, holy shit! So he's got to blast him down, and all these other people start coming out, and they're just having a free-for-all, just shooting all these people. Just people dropping dead left and right, till the people stop coming because they realize they're all being killed. They kind of back off, and this weird exchange that Eddie and Susanna have with these people, how it's just how pathetic they are, you know? You could tell how they've dealt with death, how the dead people just kind of fall to the side. And I don't know, it's so strange. They live in such a horrible place, you know, where death comes at any moment, I guess.
Yeah. Well, death comes when the god drums require it.
Right. As soon as you hear the death drum, it's time to kill somebody, right?
Yeah.
All right, guys, who's it going to be this time? They're going to have a lottery.
ZZ Top requires their sacrifice.
Yes. The Velcro Fly requires your death. They basically get these two people to take them to the cradle. This lady, I forget her name, she tells the story about a man who tried to go in there and he was shot by the blue light or something.
Yeah.
So basically someone they knew of a long time ago went in there to the train and he got zapped. So nobody goes in there anymore.
No.
Kind of in between these, we come to learn that Susanna has a secret she's not sure she wants to tell anybody yet. I mean, obviously, she thinks she's pregnant, right?
That worried me. Like, what is she pregnant from? Like, I was like, is she pregnant from that demon?
No, I would think it would be Eddie, right?
Yeah, I would hope so.
I don't even think the demon got to complete its act maybe. I don't know. I don't want to think about that. But
I tried not to analyze that too much.
The fact that you have to raise a baby in this place, I don't think is very good.
No, that's not a smart thing.
It's not very sanitary. Although I think Roland will be a decent uncle, don't you?
Uncle Roland.
Yeah, Uncle Roland. Or Godfather Roland, something like that. I don't know. Here's what's interesting. When Gasher and Jake arrive to the door, basically when this place is described as a missile silo under the city, right?
Yeah.
And it's got power. It seems to have luxuries of air. It seems to be nice and cool in there. And Gasher even describes how they got plenty of food, you know, heat when they're cold and cold when they're hot, and plenty to drink. And he can't seem to get the door open because he doesn't remember the password. And remember, we haven't even mentioned the TikTok man is who he's taking Jake to.
He's taking him to meet the TikTok.
The TikTok man. I was like, TikTok man? Who the hell is this dude? Do you remember what the password is to get in the door?
I don't. I think the TikTok man will kill me now.
He's not going to let you in.
No. Well, it skips over to that part. Once they get there, then it talks about Roland and Oi getting around another trap.
I remember the man and the woman that Eddie and Susanna talked to. Eddie calls him Jeeves because he looks like a butler, I remember. Which I thought was funny.
And they also thought that they saw that statue that looked like Roland.
Oh, yeah, when they get to the
gigantic gunslinger statue.
Right, right above the cradle is a gunslinger statue, right?
Yeah.
That was awesome. I was like, awesome! And it's on the Street of the Turtle, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was too cool, man. You know, just the parts where he's, like, yelling at Jake and, like, keeps punching him in the face or kicking him and his nose is bleeding, his lip is bleeding. You know, just like, God, I can't wait till this freak dies. And I love when the part when Roland finds, you know, when he's talking to Oi, he's like, we got to be real quiet. We got to find Jake. And he's like, ache. I thought that was great. How he's
that really is great. See, you know, it just shows you how, even though Oi can't articulate very much, he totally understands.
He's very intelligent. You know, Gasher and Jake wind up at that door, but on the way there, he starts singing a song. Like the...
Yeah.
Ribble, tee, tibble, tee, ting, ting, ting. I'll get a job and buy you a ring. When I get my mitts on your jiggly tits, ribble, tee, tibble, tee, ting. And he says it keeps the ghosts away when you sing, right? The spirit.
Yeah.
Because all that stuff down there, we come to realize, is all computers and shit. And all these stupid people think they're, like, possessed. And who knows? They are possessed by Blaine, aren't
Blaine,
they?
Blaine, yeah.
And there's something kind of crazy about him. So Roland makes it past both traps, and he's on his way there.
Oh, the password's bountiful.
Bountiful, yes, that's it. The password is bountiful. Oh, and by the way, the cradle is North Central Positronics, Cradle of Blood. So hopefully we learn more about this weird company.
Yeah, and there was, and stamped on the bridge was Lamerck Industries.
Okay, so basically they get inside, and Jake has a talk with the TikTok man. He seems
the charming TikTok man.
Yeah, he seems to be kind of a dick.
He's definitely got his stuff together there.
They describe everyone as really kind of sickly looking, like Gasher in a way, but TikTok man looks like he's very healthy. Looks like he's doing good, doesn't he?
Oh, you know what? We totally skipped over Eddie and Susanna getting to Blaine. How they're trying to figure out what's going on, and they see the sign that says North Central Positronics welcomes you. To the southeast is Blaine, northwest is Patricia. And Blaine's pink and Patricia's blue. They see the keypad that's shaped in a diamond. It says command and enter, and they're just trying to wonder what the hell going on. They press the talk listen button. They press the button that says command.
Remember, Eddie's kind
of
yelling at
it. Then all of a sudden
it.
They hear little Blaine.
Yeah, Eddie's kind of like taunting whatever it is.
I'm Little Blaine, the child's voice whispers. The one he doesn't see, the one he forgets, the one he thinks he left behind in the rooms of ruin and the halls of the dead. And Eddie's just kind of like, what? Okay.
Yeah, okay, dude.
Yeah, all right. And then Big Blaine is the ghost in the machine, the ghost in all the machines. And they finally get Big Blaine awake. And it says, how dare you disturb my sleep? Tell me now or die where you stand.
Yeah, and I like how sometimes he would talk like John Wayne.
Yeah.
He'd be like, all right, Pilgrim.
He could imitate all kinds of different people.
That was weird. Yeah, they basically
Eddie and Susanna introduce one another. They say they're on a quest. They seek the Dark Tower, which lies in the path of the beam. And they're in the company of Roland Gilead and Jake of New York. We want you to take us. And he says, do not try my patience. Gilead is no more, and those known as gunslingers are all dead. Now, in answer to my question, who are you? This is your last chance. And they start to hear the blue-white light crackle up. They have to tell him, no, you're wrong. We did come from New York. We came through the doors on the beach only a few weeks ago. It's true. We swear it. And he tells them to prove it, and they go on and tell him all about the Empire, all about New York, Empire State Building, Stock Exchange. And then as John Wayne, he says, okay, Pilgrim, I believe you.
Yeah, what the hell?
And he says, ask me a question, Eddie, of New York, and it better be a good one. There was a pause, then Blaine added, because if it's not, you and your woman are going to die no matter where you came from.
Right. And so, you know, basically what we know the Blaine wants is riddles.
Yeah.
They entertain him. You know what's interesting is when Jake is in there with the TikTok man, they treat Jake like he, you know, even though he's a child, they talk to him like they want adult answers from him, you know?
Yeah.
When he's very fascinated by Jake's watch, his Seiko.
Well, it's a TikTok.
Yeah, ooh, he wants to wear it.
Yeah, and he thought, like, I think Jake thought of the crocodile and Peter Pan and the one that's always chasing after Captain Hook.
Yeah, doesn't he have, like, this weird kind of clock mechanism necklace or something?
Yeah, he does.
And we get to see a TikTok man stab some lady who won't stop laughing, like, right in front of Jake, kills her. So that's kind of shocking. He's kind of a dickhead. And
he's very, you know, it's... He can appear normal, but he's completely abnormal, and he's very quick to anger. Like, if anybody says anything that he doesn't like, he's become, you know, these people become so afraid of him that he'll just do anything.
He's basically like the guy on Flipping Out, only like a violent version.
Yeah.
Like, no onions.
No, no one's allowed to take a number two in his house either.
He wants to know what Jake knows about computers, right? Doesn't he say something about what kind of watch is that? I forget how Jake answers, but it makes TikTok man thinks that Jake knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he asks him what the watch runs on, and Jake just kind of guesses, and that it interests him because that's how the computers run.
Right, and it's cool because Jake sees in the grill work the two eyes of Oi looking at him. Like, because on the outside, didn't you love how time goes back and forth? Like, it's a little in the past before what's actually happening with Jake. We see in the present, but then it goes outside to Roland before he actually sent Oi in there in the first place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How it kind of goes back and forth, like time lapse. I thought that was very cool how it did that. Basically, how is Roland going to get in there? And he's trying to mentally send the message to Jake to hit a button to open the door because Roland can't get it open to sneak in there.
Yeah, and he's sending Oi in to distract them so that Jake can get to the button.
And there's that moment where Roland thinks of what a loyal animal he is. Too bad he will probably die doing this. And it's like, no!
Yeah, we just got to know Oi. I don't want
to... I want Oi to die.
Yeah. You know, he sends Oi in, and as Jake sees Oi, Oi was really just in there to see how many people are there and where are they. So Roland knows where to shoot and who to shoot. And he asks Oi, how many did you see? And then Oi has to think about it for a long moment. And he lifts his right paw and extends the claws and looks at it. as if trying to remember something very difficult, and begins to tap on the steel floor, and he taps out four.
Yeah, I love that. He shows how intelligent he is. He can actually friggin' count.
You know, after Roland knows that he did well, and he goes, ache!
Yes.
And Roland says, good boy, and he goes, oi! Ache!
When it cuts back to poor Eddie and Susanna trying to figure out what Blaine wants, they figure out that he wants riddles. And Eddie's just kind of given up. He doesn't know what to do. And that's when Susanna starts to say the riddle. She's like,
yeah.
There's a thing that is nothing, yet it has a name. It's something tall and sometimes short. Yeah, he's like, a shadow, of course. An easy one, but not bad. Not bad at all. As long as Eddie doesn't tell his one about the chicken, I think.
Yeah, I think everything will be okay as long as that dead baby one isn't whipped out.
And that's how they kind of get his cooperation is he's like, do you know any more riddles? And they're like, well, our friend, our companion Jake, he has a whole book of them. You know? So that pretty much saves their lives, don't you think? Roland and Jake.
Yeah, they convince Blaine enough to, you know, hey, well, you'll get all the riddles you can handle if you just hold on.
Yeah, just... And what we don't know at this point is that Blaine, in a way, he's kind of like on 2001, Hal. He can see different parts of the city at all times. So he can see where Jake is right now and where Roland is. So while there's this, they kind of start this shit about TikTok man and Jake with the computers. Like, tell me about these computers. I forget how he described the computers, but... There's a whole banks and rows of these computers under the city, and I want them, and I want control of them. You know, he's basically, and you need to tell me, and he means business. He's going to really hurt Jake, and it's kind of scary. And remember Jake at one point quotes that story about Lord Perth that Roland said?
Yeah.
And, you know, TikTok man's a big, huge giant of a man, and he smacks him across the room. Do not speak to me of Lord Perth. That was kind of scary, because basically, you know, he was saying... There was this guy who was big, tall, giant, but a little boy killed him. You know? Do not speak of me of Lord Perth. So the way Jake kind of distracts them is he starts talking about Gasher didn't know the password. And he's like, what? I love Gasher's like, oh, hey now, this is about him right now. He's like, is this true? And Gasher's buddy's in there, too. I forget his name. But he slipped him a note and put it in his hat. And the danger there is, what if Gasher's killed and someone finds the password?
Yeah, and then he could just get in.
Yeah, like that would ever happen. I don't think the pubes would be smart enough to even figure that out. But I guess Roland would. So while he's distracting him, then... Oi jumps through the grating onto TikTok man's face and starts like biting and scratching at him and stuff.
Like, and he, his claws punch into his left eye and...
It actually pops his eye, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is really disgusting and awesome.
Yeah, it's like a horrible red pain sank into his head like a flaming torch thrown down a deep well.
Yikes.
Ow! Damn.
At this point,
Oi's a badass.
I was ready for him to just yank Oi off and like smash him in his hands or something. I don't know.
Yeah, break his back.
Yeah, and even one dude does stab Oi a couple of times, but he just barely gets him, I think.
Yeah.
Jake manages to get to the control panel where you think he's going to hit the button, but he gets distracted. He grabs a pistol and
it's a machine gun.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And he just opens up.
It's an old German machine gun.
Right.
You know, it says he had enough presence of mind left to aim low. The roar of the Schmeisser 40 caliber was ear-splitting in the enclosed space. Although it only fired five or six rounds, one of the lighted tubes popped in a burst of cold orange fire. A hole appeared an inch above the left knee of the TikTok man's tight-fitting trousers, and a dark red stain began to spread at once. And I think this is where TikTok man is telling Jake how he's going to suffer.
Right, so he shoots him in the head, and then Roland comes in, and that's one of the best moments there, because Gasher is about to... You know, that's one thing, Jake throws the gun down, it's like, no, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Gasher is going to kill Jake at this point, until Roland shows up. He comes inside... Not sure how he got in there, but we learned later it was actually Blaine that let him in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Blaine is really sick of these people.
And they don't entertain him anymore.
No, they don't. They're so...
And we find out that it's actually Blaine controlling the god drums.
Yeah. They're so very boring. But I love Gaster goes, "You!" And Roland says, "Me!" And then shoots him in the head. How awesome was that?
And I love the description of he fired once and the left side of Gaster's head disintegrated.
Awesome. That guy deserved it. Totally.
Yeah, he totally did.
And then he starts plugging the other people in the room. Which
just
I
don't
love.
Get any of that blood on you.
Yeah, no crap. That shit will make you sick. So this is when Blaine makes his presence known to them. And he's like, "Roland! Roland of Gilead! Jake of New York!" I love this whole kind of bit here where they make their escape and it kind of describes as everything is shorting out. And it's almost like the people who live there, the pubes and the grays, they're acting like it's friggin' Armageddon. The people are committing suicide left and right. It was just really crazy, wasn't it? Just the thought,
yeah,
of the idea.
It's like all of a sudden this alarm goes off and their finite minds are like, "Oh, this is the end. This is worse than the god drums."
Yeah, it's the end of the world, basically. And remember, Jake was choked and stuff. He's kind of out of it at this point.
Yeah, Jake and Oi.
Poor Oi. He asks Roland, he's like, "Son of Steven." You know what I mean? He's like, "Roland, son of Steven." And I love how Jake is like, "Are you Jake of New York?" And he's, "That's me, Jake of New York, son of Elmer." And he asks him if he's still got the riddles. He's like, "I sure do," or whatever. They know that they're cool.
Yeah, and he goes, "What you got, little pilgrim?"
And remember, this other guy comes in there for a second. And he's like, "Fire in the walls! There's fire in the walls!" And he like zaps him, disintegrates him. And he goes, "That was rude. He interrupted me."
Yeah. That's whenever they know, holy shit.
"Susanna of New York says you have a great many riddles by heart, Roland of Gilead. Is that true?" "Yes." That's awesome. So basically he leads him out of there as all this all hell's breaking loose around there. And he even explains that he's going to release a gas, right? And
yeah.
Destroy everyone in the city, that and he's leading them to the path to the cradle. And they see these rows and rows of computer banks and stuff under the city. And Jake knows this is the place that, you know, TikTok Man was talking about, that he wanted control of. Don't you love the moment when Jake and Roland are going up? You know, they're basically on a conveyor belt, right? Is what it sounds like, following this this orb.
Yeah, this underground passage past all the computers. And that's whenever the opening into the station, they come out of it.
We didn't really convey, you know, you see in the book how scared Susanna and Eddie were. They never thought they were going to see Roland or Jake again, really, in
no.
the back of their minds. They felt like it's quite possible they'd never see them again. And when they come rising out of there, it's like this big, grand, happy moment. Oh, my God, they're there. And, you know, they're just grabbing both of them. They can't believe it. It's swell times. And they've even got Oi with them. Hey, look at him.
Yeah, and I love, like, once they get there, that Roland looks down into where they came up from. And he's like, "What's down there?" And Roland says, "Machines and madness."
Yeah.
And Eddie says, "Loquacious as ever, I see."
Yeah. I just love the way those characters play off each other. Now, before they get on Blaine, there's a strange moment with TikTok Man. His real name is Andrew Quick.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you think he's dead, but he's not quite dead. And he's lulled awake. If that's a term. Can you lull someone to sleep? You can lull them awake too?
Yeah.
He's brought to consciousness by some strange, ageless man.
There you go.
He's some guy's talking to him, you know, like, "Andrew, wake up."
"Raise your head and look at me."
How creepy was that? He's like, "Look at me, raise your head." What happens here is this man is saying that, you know, "Would you like to kill the boy Jake? Would you like to kill the gunslinger?" He's like, "Oh, yes, I would." And he even soothes his pain, doesn't he? Because, I mean...
Yes, he does.
He's been shot in the head. He's in a lot of pain. His eyes, a little mass there of mint jelly. It's kind of disgusting.
Mm, delicious.
And he's like, who are you? And he's like, I'm known by many names. The Ageless Stranger. What does he even say? Merlin the Wizard or something like
that?
Well,
there are some that call me Jimmy, some that call me Timmy. Some that call me Handy, some that call me Dandy. They can call me Loser or they can call me Winner, just as long as they don't call me in too late for dinner. And then he talks about how he's been called the Ageless Stranger. And I've also been called Merlin or Marilyn. And who cares, because I was never that one. Although I never denied it either. I am sometimes called the Magician or the Wizard. But I hope we can go forward together on more humble terms, Andrew. More human terms.
So we're thinking that in The Gunslinger, didn't Roland described, we knew Martin, right?
Yes.
We knew the... Which was the more powerful wizard? There was the Man in Black and there was Martin, right?
Or, I believe Martin was.
There was two wizards. One was more powerful. We're thinking maybe...
But see, this is weird, though, because in The Gunslinger, in the revised edition, Martin and the Man in Black are the same person. In the subsequent books, they're not. Who knows what King's doing there? He reveals himself as Richard... He says, call me Fannin, Richard Fannin. That's not exactly right, maybe, but I reckon it's close enough for government work.
All I know is this, is that TikTok Man's got a head wound, and I'm sure he's like, whatever, dude. It's like, I don't understand the strange talk you're talking about.
Whatever you want, just fix me.
Yeah, he will fix him if he serves him, basically.
Yeah.
Becomes like his little underling, and his main task is to kill them. Doesn't he even say at one time... That man was my friend, but he betrayed me about Roland.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. I was hoping they'd show up again, but they don't. That's it for them.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've only got like 30 pages left.
And I'm like, what is this development? There's not enough time. The book's almost over. So I love the whole Blaine the Mono sequence when they're all on the train and how crazy he was, and the place is luxurious, it looks beautiful, and there's even this nice ice sculpture of Roland there, missing the two fingers.
Well, before they can even get on the train, they've got to figure out how to get on the train.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Before the gas gets to them and kills them.
Right.
So, you know, Blaine's telling them like 6 minutes. 2 minutes, you know, he keeps telling them how long they have, and they have to figure out a riddle, and it has to do with prime numbers, and that's the code, reverse, like the reverse prime numbers of this diamond pad.
Yeah, I love what he's telling them is also a riddle of how to get them started, which was really cool.
Susanna's got to, like, flashback into Odetta and Detta Walker to remember how her father taught the prime numbers and all that. It was a really cool sequence of her having to use all her personalities as one.
Right. And I love the kind of little graphic in the book of the numbers and them scratched out.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very cool.
And they finally get the combination with, like, I think, like 50 seconds to go.
Don't they even worry about the people in the riverside town? Like, will be gassed?
Yeah, they do. Like, what... You know, what are going to come of them? And he says that the wind will probably blow it away, but you can't trust Blaine. Blaine's a pain.
He's probably just blowing smoke up their asses.
Exactly. Because he doesn't care about human life. All he cares about is riddles. He's found someone to entertain him, and then in the process, he'll kill them.
Right, and they even determine, even though they're on this nice little ride through the city... What I love is this, they're on this monorail, this high-tech kind of thing where he can make the, go into viewer mode where the wall, it looks like they're just riding on nothing, like floating.
Yeah, it's a hologram mode where he can replicate everything that's going outside and even remove the tracks so it just looks like they're flying.
Right.
And it's making them all sick.
And you can see, like, people dying in the ground, running around. It's just, like, just death all around. It's like, no, this isn't the view I'd really want, is it?
No. And this is where we find out that the last stop is Topeka. And that coincides with Charlie the Choo-Choo.
Now, is this Topeka, Kansas, do you think? Or Topeka somewhere
else?
Well,
I don't know any other Topeka.
Well, I was just thinking, is it Topeka somewhere else in Midworld, or...
For some odd reason, I think it's Topeka, Kansas, and I think I know where we're going.
Oz?
No, I think we're crossing over into another Stephen King area, which is so... God, I hope I'm right.
I mean, basically, you can do anything.
The connection of Maw, I love how he says, like, Jake even knows, only as far as Topeka, and Jake said in a low voice, and yes, Blaine said, Topeka is the name of my terminating point, although I'm surprised you know it. And then it says, with all you know about our world, Jake thought, how come you don't know that some lady wrote a book about you, Blaine? Was it that name change? Was it something that simple to fool a complicated machine like you into overlooking your own biography? And what about Beryl Evans, the woman who supposedly wrote Charlie the Choo-Choo? Did you know her, Blaine? Where is she now? And it's just, it's like, oh, okay. So this one, like I said earlier, this woman obviously crossed over. And how can something as simple as a name change fool Blaine? So it's almost like Blaine thinks he's so much more intelligent than everyone else.
Right.
Like, they're just a toy, and he, you know, his mind is so much higher than everyone else's.
And he describes to them how his counterpart, what was the other train's name?
Patricia.
Patricia killed herself.
And he pretty much led her to do it.
Right. He cut her off from all the systems.
He drove her crazy.
Right. And how he's the one doing the drums and them killing themselves and...
He's an asshole.
And Jake figures out that he's actually going to kill himself, and it's a lot more fun taking other people with him, right? And the riddles are just to entertain him. And I love how Roland is like, he's like, tell me a riddle. And Roland's like, no.
No.
Go F yourself. And I love that moment where Roland stands up to him, don't you?
Oh, yeah. It's like when Roland stands up, and it's just that moment of awesome confidence. Like, you know, Blaine's never had anybody stand up to him like that before.
And even it describes how Jake, Eddie, and Suzanne are all kind of like smirking and smiling like, holy shit, he told him off, you know? He shut him the hell up. But we can't forget about their view of the wastelands as they're traveling.
Oh my gosh,
once they leave the city and they go through this hole and...
They like pass the wall... From out of blood, and then it's like, what the hell?
And it's Blaine superimposes the ground. They're like way high up where it's like they're flying. It's almost scary as hell when they come out of it. It's like, oh, it's jarring how high up they are. And it superimposes. You can see lava and shit flying up and these ugly, grotesque creatures. Didn't it describe it how it made them just sick in the pit of their stomach looking at these things?
Yeah.
Just, like, disgusting.
And it's like, it's not... I think they asked, like... At first, they thought that, you know, Ludd was devastated by, like, a nuclear war. And then they see the wastelands. And it's like something seriously wrong went on here. Like, this isn't war. This is madness.
Right. And doesn't Blaine even say, no, not nuclear war. Something worse or something like
that. Yeah.
When, you know, Roland confronts Blaine, he makes a deal with him. That if he can stump him on a riddle, he'll let them live. Blaine will let them live. But if they can't, then he'll go ahead and finish them off. And it's like, oh man, that's crazy. But I'm pretty sure that Roland knows a shitload of riddles.
Yeah, Roland's got his shit together.
Which will be awesome. So, and then, you know, you turn the page and you're like, all right, what's... Oh, wait a second. Hey, my book ended? What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, and it's all... It's like... Oh, it's one of the toughest cliffhanger endings ever.
Very well, Roland. Very well, Eddie. Susanna, Jake. I love how he says, very well, Oi of Midworld.
Mentions Oi. Like, Oi's going to give a riddle.
You are a quartet, one made for many. So am I. All right, I got to turn the page to see... Wait, huh? And then the book ends. Do you love the author's note at the end?
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, but sometimes books just end themselves.
And it's like, I almost felt like you could decipher it as author's note. I know many of you were pissed off at me right now. But trust me, this is where the book needed to end. See you in the next book. Bye. What? What? Okay, so how many years between The Wastelands and Wizard in Glass is what I want to know. The publication date. Say you bought the Wastelands the day it came out because you were excited since the drawing of the three. It's 1991. This book has come out. When did Wizard and Glass come out? Because right now, you and I could go to the store and buy Wizard and Glass. In fact, we have. We have it.
Yeah, we have it.
But for people who read this book right when it came out and finished it, I'm just curious how long they had to wait.
I'm looking here. 1998. Wow.
Holy shit, dude. That would have driven me nuts.
So 6 years.
6 years wondering.
5, 6 years, yeah.
For 6 years, they were on Blaine the Mono waiting for him.
They were waiting to begin their riddle battle.
That would have driven me nuts. Thank God that we didn't have to go through that, right?
Yeah.
Now that the book is over, how did you feel? Like,
I loved it. I was blown away by it. Like, there was so much more than I would have ever expected from the Dark Tower series so far. You know, in the first one you had, you know, just the journey, and in the second one you had the collection of the Quartet, and now in this one, now that the Quartet's all together and you finally start to get a glimpse of how screwed up Roland's world is.
Yeah.
And you kind of get a handle of how large this quest is. You know, it sounds simple, just find the Dark Tower, but there's so much more to that.
I mean, they didn't even make it that far until Gasher showed up. It was like, ah, shit, we've already... Even Eddie thinks that. He's like, we were all together, things were going good, and then boom, everything's out of whack. Jake's gone, Roland's off to get him, you know, just so fast. And just...
It's an incredibly fast-paced book.
From Shardik to North Central Positronics to the, you know, the riddles and...
There's so many questions that are brought forward that you're just, you feel overwhelmed by them. So many clues.
Right. The weird kind of, you know, what they call is Ka and part of the Quartet, the links between worlds and Jake's side and on their side. I love all of that. I think it's really cool and intricate. Even the stuff about the histories of things like, you know, the town of Ludd and the river people and all that. I just think it's so interesting how intricate it gets, how deep it is, you know? I find myself starting to wonder what Ludd was like in the past and how it had these advanced computers and everything. At one time, they had these two working monorails, and I mean, it seems pretty advanced in terms of technology.
Incredibly advanced.
I mean, for Christ's sakes, they could build a gigantic bear with a radar dish on its head. They could build robots and stuff.
And a monorail that's suspended by the beam.
As cliche as it sounds, it really captures the imagination.
It's like the old ones became so technologically advanced that is it kind of like a Matrix situation where the machines turned on them and they ended up turning on themselves? Or like, what caused this disaster?
And right, at the same time, you got to think of someone like Roland, who's a gunslinger. Why do they have a golden statue of a gunslinger? I mean, why would this advanced civilization also kind of have this... you know, now that I think about it, maybe somewhere in our cities we have statues of a knight with a sword or something. So maybe it's something like that. I don't know. You know, like every episode, Bill, we have a couple of comments on the book from our listeners.
Well, thank God for that. We're not doing this shit for our health.
We have Swiley, who has his comments, and we have Ross. Let's check out Swiley's comments on The Wastelands by Stephen King. The Dark Tower, Book 3. Sorry, I got... the audiobook makes me do that.
Nowhere in Mulberry Book Club. This is Swiley with some feedback for Dark Tower, Book 3, The Wastelands. Well, I would say after the initial encounter with the giant mechanical bear, which was awesome, Shardik or Mir or whatever, I kind of found the rest of the first half of the book to be a bit of a slog. I don't know, the material with Jake in New York, it seemed sort of tedious. It felt like, okay, we know this is going to be important later on in the book, but why are we going through this, you know, child story, you know, and riddles, I thought the bookstore, the guy in the bookstore, Mr. Tower, that was a little bit too obvious. But once we got to the haunted mansion with Plaster Man and all that great stuff, that was an awesome scene, and it really carried on through the rest of the book with that level of excellence. Other points in the book, I really thought that the stopover with the old townspeople, the survivors, that was really great. It was one of the first times in the series so far that it felt like you could take a breather and just sort of soak up some exposition, sort of naturally, just kind of explanations about the world and the nature of this whole universe that we're in. And then, of course, once we get to Ludd, I mean, that was just a rocket ship. I mean, I don't know how to describe it, but that was a fast read. I mean, it took me a couple of weeks, I think, this past month to get through the I don't know, first three quarters of the book, but the last section of it was a really quick read. I thought that Blaine the Mono was a really, really cool character. A little quibble for me would be I didn't think little Blaine was really necessary. I think Stephen King sort of has a crutch of having all his characters have either split personalities or schizophrenia or voices in their head. And I didn't think that little Blaine added much. But the main character, I just pictured if they were to film this, it would be such a challenge for the voice actor to get the right tone, you know. It seemed inspired by Hal from 2001, but not at all derivative. I don't know, just really creepy and weird. Yeah, great book. I thought that Stephen King used a lot of misdirection, sort of hinting at what's going to happen. I really thought that Eddie might take one for the team when Jake was pulled over into Midworld. I thought that something really bad was going to happen, and char meaning death coming towards the end was like, oh crap, what's going to happen? That was cool. I just really enjoyed the finale being sort of a battle of wits after sort of the physical confrontation. Stephen King is great at creating tension, obviously, and deep conflict between, you know, these violent parties that are at odds. But it was really cool to have, you know, the riddles be the conclusion of this, and man, what a cock tease. It's great that we have the next book to start, because I was ready to go right away, and I'm sure you guys are wrapping up, so thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, thanks, Wiley. Well, yeah, definitely the way it ended with the riddles was very cool. I mean, it's a cool way to do it, like you said, a battle of wits.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I said earlier that chapter of Jake is one of my favorite in the book, so I can't...
Yeah, I just love the...
I can't really
that
relate
we finally
to
get to see how messed up Jake's life was.
Well, after Jake died in The Gunslinger, I was very curious to know if this character survived in the drawing of the three now. I wanted to see what was going on with him. So I was really excited to see what was up with Jake.
Mm-hmm.
I find that story of how he gets back to Roland just as interesting as what's going on with Roland, Eddie, and Susanna.
Yeah, same here.
So I'm sorry.
I found it more interesting.
Just the whole chapter where he's reading the book, where he's reading Charlie the Choo Choo, I just thought was fascinating. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. And how, you know, you're kind of reading it and tying it in. What could this mean later on? And someone's named Susanna here. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it means something as you're reading it. You're not just reading a kid's story, which is really awesome. So I'm glad you liked it, Swiley. I mean, I know there's certain parts that kind of drag or whatever, but that's cool.
To each his own.
Yeah, to each his own. I mean, you still like the book, right? I mean, I know I did. The most frustrating thing, seriously, about the book club, Bill, is the fact that I feel like as soon as we finish the book, we need to do the show and then start the new book. Because in reality, if there was no book show, I would have picked the other book up and started reading it right away.
Sure.
which is driving me nuts. So we got to finish this show so we can start on the new book. All right. This new voicemail is from Ross. Let's check out what Ross felt about The Wastelands by Stephen King. The Dark Tower, Book 3, Bill.
Hey, Bill and Jason, and maybe quite possibly Stephen if we're lucky.
No.
This is Ross from Northern California calling about The Wastelands. I don't know if I've completely missed the boat and missed the cutoff to make it on the show, but I figured I'd call and give you my opinion of this book anyway. Just wanted to let you know that I know you guys said that it was cool to listen to the books on tape or audiobooks, tape, what is this, like 82? and I was pretty successful in reading the first two, but, you know, I had a baby, and as he's starting to get more lucid and active, he's taking up a little bit more time, so I did have to listen to the third book. I know you guys said it was okay, but part of me felt, you know, like a little dirty, like a little cheapened, you know? but I guess that's probably just my own thing. I do have to say, though, that now that I have listened to the books, the audiobooks, Bill was completely right. Frank Mueller, or however you pronounce his name, did an incredible job, and I'm actually looking more forward to listening to the book than reading it, because, you know, if somebody does something that good, I kind of want to enjoy it. And especially it's 23 hours, and I don't know where I'm going to be able to find 23 hours to read. Plus, I am not that fast of a reader, so it'd probably take me even more. Anyway, I did love this book. I thought it was great. But it's kind of funny. Every time that we go from, you know, book one to book two or however it is, chapter one to chapter two, however he breaks it down, I kind of feel like there's this lull. It happened to me in The Drawing of the Three when we got into the Detta stuff that I was kind of like, what's this? And then by the end, it gets really, really good. And I kind of felt the same way about this one. Like when we got into the Jake stuff, I was so interested in what Roland and the other two were doing that I was just kind of like, oh, can we kind of get on with things? But by the end, you know, when we get into the whole thing in the mansion and we get into, you know, Detta and her whole experience with the demon, bringing Jake through, you know, I was completely hooked into that storyline. But I just really like this one. I also really like the stuff at the town of River Crossing. I think it's great when in, you know, books and movies, when right before, like, it's going to hit the fan, they have this moment of levity, kind of like when in The Lord of the Rings they went and, you know, met up and had that council at Agent Smith's town, I forget what it's called, but, you know, or when
Rivendell,
Princess Bride, they had the whole Miracle Max thing right before they went and stormed the castle. I just liked that moment right before, and I thought that it really was just kind of cool to see that they were still, you know, decent people in that world. I think that this would make an excellent movie, but I also think it would probably be the most expensive movie ever done, and it's going to be interesting to see how they actually pull it off. And I think I'm almost with you guys saying that it'd be even better if it was a miniseries, you know, or they could turn the whole series of books into probably several series of a regular TV show, but or several seasons, I mean. But love the book. You guys did a great job picking it, and I can't wait till the next one. I almost cheated and listened to it before your show came out, and then I was thinking, what am I going to do, like, listen to the next one after that, and then I'm, you know, 2 or 3 months ahead of you guys, and it just can't happen. So I have stayed off temptation. So you guys keep up the great work, and I can't wait to talk to you guys about the next one. All right, bye.
All right, thanks, Ross. Glad you liked it.
Excellent.
And don't feel dirty for listening to the audiobook, because I've listened to them too. After I read each book, you know, Bill sends it to me, and they're awesome.
Yeah, I love reading it and then getting that take that Frank Mueller does. The guy, man, I wish, you know, it's kind of sad to think that Wizard in Glass is the last one he ever was able to do.
Right, and I was going to say that, actually, there's a story in Everything's Eventual. It's a compilation of short stories by Stephen King.
Uh-huh.
There's a story that takes place in Roland's world called The Little Sisters of Illyria. I believe, mm-hmm. I might be pronouncing it wrong, but I've read that Frank Mueller, whatever, he also read that book, audiobook.
Oh, great.
that story is on audio somewhere that he read. And I say, as soon as we're done with Wizard of Glass, it's spoiler-free where we could actually read that story and not be spoiled for the rest of the series. So we ought to check that out, at least listen to it or read it.
Yeah.
So, hey, if we finish this 600 and so page book by in time to read a different story, I say we do that, which would be awesome. And that's another thing. You know, the Wastelands, I have this really bad habit of stretching things out because I want it to last longer because I'm enjoying it. That's a sign of a good book, wouldn't you say? You just, oh, I don't want it to end.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've got a much thicker book to read. So I've got to push myself to read it more and more.
It's a big one. You know, I looked at it, and it's the biggest one of the four in the first.
Basically, four. I'm going to have to read about 200 pages a week, I would say.
Well, if it takes us a little longer, that's fine.
Yeah, so let's get this show cranked out. And I appreciate everybody who's listening to our shows and following along with us in the book club. I think that's awesome. We're all reading the same stuff. And what's cool for you people who are part of the book club, you're probably already reading Wizard in Glass, and you're hearing us talk about this and going, oh man, these guys are so off. But here's what I think happens in the first chapter of Wizard of Glass. They all die, and it introduces a new character.
An all-new quartet.
Yeah, the Rifleman is what I'm guessing, Bill.
And Little Blaine.
Little Blaine, yeah.
Little Blaine was real. He was actually a pube hiding in the
train.
He was
a little boy locked in the glove compartment, and mm-hmm. he was talking, don't wake him up.
He's actually a midget,
though. The Little Blaine is a midget with a grenade.
Awesome. just thinking back, Eddie called the midget with the grenades Lord Fauntleroy?
Yeah, he called him Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Fauntleroy.
Yeah.
And that made me laugh. I don't know what, that just popped into my head. I always loved like the names that Eddie would give people, like you said about how Sawyer does that on Lost.
Right. There's so many tie-ins. I mean, I know if people are reading the series who've never watched Lost, seriously, I started watching season 2 again on Netflix just after reading Drawing of the Three, and it's just like everything I look at, even if it's not related to it, I see it tied in. Like, oh man, they took that from the book, you know? There's a part where Sawyer gets his bullets wet and he's wondering if they'll still work, and I'm like, oh, come on, that's right out of the Drawing of the Three, man. But seriously, it's awesome. Bill, I love this book. And I almost feel like this is, when I was done reading this book, I was like, many years down, I'm going to pick this book up and read it again, you mm-hmm. know? But right
yeah,
now,
it's definitely one of those books that you need to read again.
Definitely. It's awesome. Book 3 of the series. People are telling me all the time, you know, hey, you guys should read this. I'm just like, I can't. We're only on the third book, dude. You know, we've got 4 more books to read. Talk
yeah,
to
and I think we
that.
Already have our, after this one set up, so... You know, right. You can suggest, but don't expect us to do it anytime soon. We know what we want to read.
Right. I even know a couple of individual books I've always wanted to read in my life. I don't know. Basically, you and I will talk about it and see if both of us are mutually interested in that kind of thing. So
I think we're on the same wavelength.
We're definitely not going to be reading The Grapes of Wrath or anything like that. That's no fun for
Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, or just stuff like that. But anyway, I would say, Bill, we got this one in the bag. There might be little details we might have left out, but one thing that everyone should know by listening to this episode is that we love the book.
Yes, we do.
We totally love the quartet and can't wait to see what happens to him next.
And they are one of many.
And hopefully it introduces the Rifleman, which is my character. You know, I'm going to create my own series, Bill, just a complete ripoff of the Gunslinger. The Rifleman.
I think that's an excellent idea. And you can say it's, you know, so you don't get sued, you can say it's inspired by...
The Black Needle.
The Black Needle?
The Black Statue. I get nothing.
The Black Statue? Wait a second.
Wait,
here.
Statue? Wait a second.
That's
it's
racist.
Not a Black Tower, it's a statue, Bill. I got nothing. All right.
The Black Monolith.
The Black Monolith, yeah! All right, everybody, let's end it with some ceremonial God drums of Lud and kill the person sitting next to you as you listen. Awesome. Bye. All right, Bill, let's draw straws.
Do we have to? I vote we just kill Steven.
Right. Actually, he slumped over here next to me. He's dead.
I thought so. I thought I heard him snoring.
No, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead.
Yes.
Oh.
Blaine zapped him. He couldn't solve the easiest riddle. So he zapped him.
What do you ask him?
That's
why the chicken, or why the dead baby crossed the road?
Yes. It was the riddle from The Last Boy Scout.
Oh, jeez.
Why did Milo cross the road? Because his dick was stapled to the chicken. Or something like that. Stuck in the chicken. I don't know. I screwed that up, Bill. Whatever. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
That's enough of that.
Now this is
podcasting.
Adventure beyond the imagination. With one writer who towers above the rest. Experience the ultimate fantasy series, Stephen King's Dark Tower. Available where books are sold.